Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Well, another very important broadcast lined up for all of you out there today. It is the fourth day, Wednesday, the 4th of February, 2009. We're going to be live here for the next 4 hours. We have one of the lawyers who is a plaintiff and an expert on the fact that Hillary Clinton is not allowed under the Constitution to be the Secretary of State because she served in the legislative and voted for a pay raise for that position during the same period directly preceding it. So we'll spend about 20, 30 minutes on that coming up in the next hour. Then Peter Schiff in 2 hours joins us, Euro-Pacific Capital, talking about the latest developments in the economy. And then Peter Wallison, American Enterprise Institute, on the banker takeover situation. He's definitely an insider and been an advisor to multiple Treasury departments and different administrations. So that is coming up today as well. But he's a 30-minute guest. So is Peter Schiff. So is our other guests. So we'll have lots of time to cover other news and take your calls. Other news like this. Red alert. Red alert. Cheney warns of new attacks. Cheney warns of new attacks in an exclusive interview with Politico.com. We'll be going over that report. Also, new missing memos have been leaked that I guess were left on White House computers. And it's now been leaked out by the Obamanoids, I guess. And it's just exactly what we said. In fact, worse, where they openly say they're going to use the military inside the United States and that there's no Constitution, no Bill of Rights, no Fourth Amendment. And these are only one-paragraph summaries. This was just a memo summary left on a computer system. And who knows, they probably leaked this on purpose just to flaunt it in our face. And the Obamanoids are now saying maybe Cheney's right about executive power and police state because it keeps us safe from Al-Qaeda. So we'll be getting into this Cheney warns of new attacks report. Remember, Rahm Emanuel said that they're going to tag gun control onto the anti-terror fight, that he knows the American people will go with the anti-terror fight against the Second Amendment. So that's how they're going to phrase all of this under the Democrats. I predicted that before I even knew Rahm Emanuel had said this about a year ago, that once the Democrats were in power, they would mix gun control in with anti-terrorism, and certainly that is the battle plan. What, you won't turn your gun in? You're with the terrorists? I mean, and I got an email. A person made a great point. If they've got over 1 million Americans and growing by 20-plus thousand a month, 25,000-plus a month, being added to it, and then they have this criminal database of 2 million, if you're a suspected terrorist, why aren't they interviewing you? Why aren't they interrogating you? Why aren't they having a grand jury indict you? Well, because under this new system, they just say they think you might be a terrorist and you have no rights. That's the whole point about not having a Bill of Rights or Constitution. So they let these people they claim are terrorists, 1 million Americans, run around everywhere. I mean, there's 1 million Al-Qaeda terrorists in America. And you've heard Fox News and BBC, there's blonde-haired, blue-eyed Al-Qaeda, they're everywhere. Look under your bed, look in the closet at night, look over in your backyard, in the garden, there may be Al-Qaeda hiding there amongst the turnips. So I'm going to break that down. No doubt in my mind they're planning to stage an inaugural bombing in the next 6 to 7 months, just like 9/11. And there, I mean, you think the worship of Bush with a 92% approval rating after they staged 9/11 was high. Obama will probably be 98% or something, except people are now aware of government-sponsored terror. But the Pentagon is running things for the foreign offshore banks. We're going into receivership, and they need to stage a terror attack to slap the lid on our freedoms and liberties and complete our journey into absolute complete enslavement, despotism, bondage. So three big guests today, your phone calls, a ton of news, and Dick Cheney, big time Dick Cheney, says get ready for the terror. Friday from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Central Standard Time as the InfoWar explodes to meet the threat of the New World Order. Found at the front lines in the InfoWar. The tip of the spear. The outcome of this battle and this overall war lies with you, the people, not just of the United States and North America, but the people of Asia, Europe, Latin America. We stand together against the forces of the eugenics crime syndicate known as the New World Order. Commit to never surrender. Commit to go through your fear of what your neighbors, your boss, your employees think, your pastor thinks. Go through the fear of being concerned they might put you in a FEMA camp. They will put you in that FEMA camp if you give in to them. The enemies running this nation now are the most vicious criminals ever seen throughout history. They are the individuals who have proven themselves to be mass murdering control freaks. So I'm going to ask you something right now, ladies and gentlemen. Who are you? Are you in the fight against tyranny? Are you on the sidelines getting run over? Or are you serving the dark forces? I'm asking you, who are you? Who are you? Who are you? Send in your skeletons. Send them in. We know they're here. And if we just turn loose the power of humanity, the dynamic human spirit, we're going to blast them. We're going to defeat them. We're going to crush them. We're going to smash them into junk. Commit to never surrender. To be a true patriot. To defend liberty and freedom and the innocent against the New World Order. I want to hear you roar for freedom. I want to hear your battle howl. All right, Cheney warns of new attacks. Cheney warns of new terrorist attacks. Former Vice President Dick Cheney warned that there is a high probability that terrorists will attempt a catastrophic nuclear biological attack in coming years, and said he fears the Obama administration's policies will make it more likely the attempt will succeed. How many years did I tell you? And I saw them setting this up with Patriot Act 2. They said, if you don't pass this, this will allow terrorists to attack. So this is classic terrorism. They say, give us what we want politically. Let us overthrow the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, or the boogeyman will come and will get you. That is the definition of terrorism, threatening violence or carrying out violence for a political or economic gain. And so we're being terrorized, and it even came out in White House memos. Ari Fleischer, the previous press secretary before Scott McClellan and then Perino, he came out and said, yeah, the White House is issuing terror alerts for political gain, like it was no big deal, and the Associated Press reported on it. Amazing. In a press conference, in the White House press room. On record, they issue these to terrorize the public and for political gain, to set up this huge police state apparatus that we told you over and over and over again was being designed and set up and built publicly in all the documents, just not openly. They weren't announcing it on the news, but if you publicly went and looked at the documents, it was for the American people, for gun owners, for marijuana smokers, for people that won't hand over their land, for people that sue government servants that call themselves officials and authorities. And now you hear tens of thousands upon tens of thousands, in some cases tens of thousands per state, of using the Patriot Act against non-terror-related cases, arguing with police, being caught with marijuana, fistfights, being charged as terrorists. They're swinging the entire system they built around to be pointed right at myself, right at you, right at all of us. And now we have, inside the Brady campaign, videotape released from inside the bowels of that at a closed meeting, a giant auditorium filled with criminal creatures that wish to disarm, defang the American people, castrate the American people, bound the American people, so they can have our way with us, saying, we're going to use the threat of terrorism with guns as the pretext to ban at will, through executive fiat, individuals owning guns. And I'm telling you, folks, I've seen them preparing it, talking about wanting to put metal detectors in shopping malls, wanting to put metal detectors on street corners, make citizens line up and be searched. All of this airport security business was training the American people to take their shoes off, to have their toothpaste taken away, to have their bottled water taken away, to have breastfeeding mothers drink their own milk out of a bottle. It's all about humiliation. It's all about training you to accept it. Now, it backfired, and people flying cut back massively. So now when you fly, they, yes, sir, thank you. It's all this fakeness, but they still have you submit and go through all of this. They even changed the color of the TSA uniforms to try to confuse people. See, it's backfiring on them. And so now Dick Cheney got up before he left office, and he said, I think Barack Obama needs to keep all the new presidential executive tools we got. Where they say the president's even outside the executive and the vice president's outside even the executive and outside all branches of government and literally can order torture, secret arrest, is above the law, is the law. Like God speaking from the white throne of judgment. And then Obama, 3 weeks ago, with Stephanopoulos on his Sunday morning TV show, said, yeah, I agree with Cheney on that. And now they're saying, oh, we do need to keep the tools of secret arrest, and they're just going to change the name of torture to extreme and harsh interrogation. They may close Guantanamo, but they're building other ones and saying they'll be right here in the United States. And then they announce they're building the FEMA camps, more of them, and trying to pass laws to merge local police under them inside the military compounds. It's all there, everything exactly as we told you would happen, because we were reading their own documents. And the documents were all compartmentalized, but you could lay each one of them side by side and see a completely clear picture. You could differ with my interpretation of it, but now in hindsight, you can't. Exactly right. Precisely right. Because I probably read 50, 60, 70 books about the Nazis, like Heinz Hobel, Order to the Death's Head, 900 pages, all about how they ran it, all their own memos, all their own details, how they controlled dissidents, how they took over the society, how they federalized the police. I probably read 15, 20 books on Joseph Stalin, on Lenin, on the purges, on the takeovers from 1917 right through into the 50s. I've read many books about communist China, including put out by the communist government itself, admitting they killed 80 plus million. Our media says 60 million. They say 80 million, and they're proud of it. The government of China says 80 plus mil. One book says 84 put out by the government. One says 86. I don't know. They're proud of that. Talk about Megadeth. That's Megadeth 80 plus times. Megadeth, 1 million deaths. That's 10, 100-person, 100,000-person football stadiums. 10, 100,000-person football stadiums 80 plus times. Think about that number. That is thousands and thousands of sports stadiums with 100,000 people per stadium gone. That's the hobby. Some of you like to bird watch or go out and watch butterflies and bees flap around. Some of you like to garden. Some of you like hot rods, hop-ups. Some of you like boating. Some of you like watches. Some of you like women. Some of you like men. Some of you like drinking. Some of you like sports. Some of you ride unicycles as your hobby. Some of you like to box. Others like to travel. The globalists like to kill. And that's what they do. And they're going to teach you to love being murdered. They're going to teach you to love having everything you own taken from you first. And then you can beg them for the little handouts of food. They have to totally implode our economy and our society to create a crisis so bad with rioting and starvation that people beg to turn their guns in for food. So we'll come back. Cheney warns of new attacks. In an interview with Politico, Cheney unyieldingly defended the Bush administration's support for Guantanamo Bay Prison and coercive interrogation of terrorism suspects. We'll be right back on the other side of this key transmission. Stay with us. How this works is Obama comes in with all this hype. In his first 200 days, he controls the House. He controls the Senate. He controls many state governors. He controls the executive. He controls the bureaucracy, the regional governors, the governors of FEMA, the true governors. He's under international treaty, controlled by the internationalist himself, the regional governor of the main imperial base, the United States. And the slaves toiling here, not just under economic and bondage and embargo, but deeply under mind control. And then after their 200 days, they need a staged event. Will it be a mass shooting in a shopping mall, hundreds dead? Will supposed Muslim terrorists hit multiple shopping malls across the nation? And then we'll hear that they were killed. In truth, the black op operators will send in Muslim double agents who believe that they're just making a drug drop-off or something in a shopping mall. The special ops will kill them first, opening fire, then spray, wearing fake beards, into the crowd. They'll be allowed to escape. The feds will be on hand, ordering a stand down as they did at Columbine and Blacksburg. They will then take off their beards, get in police uniforms, and go out the back into a waiting truck and leave. Then news video will be put on television of the Muslim terrorist. I mean, that's how they do it. That's how they do 7-7. That's how they do all these events. That's how they carried out 9-11. We know the supposed hijackers were CIA on record in triplicate, just from every angle admitted. We're supposed to just forget about all that. Or will they stage another big 9-11 with jets? Or will they set off a nuke? Or will they say that, oh my gosh, bird flu has jumped completely into humans, it's airborne. Thousands dying in Canada. Thousands dying in New York. Thousands dying in Tokyo. Shut down the United States. During this time of crises, FEMA will save you. There's so many little tricks they can pull out of that black bag they've got of black ops. And then the people will truly learn to worship government and learn to worship. And the government will say, do whatever we say, hand over the property, hand over the fines and fees, hand over the incredible taxation and regulation, and we will save you. We're launching new wars against new enemies. This country, that country was behind the attacks. They can release a bioweapon and say it naturally mutated. They can release a bioweapon and say that some nation or rogue group released it, or they can do many other things. With all the genetic engineering going on, the cross-species hybridization that gives rise to bizarre bacterial and microplasm mutations, viral mutations, it could on its own get out and wreak havoc even better for the globalists. In case after case after case after case after case of Ebola and HIV and foot and mouth, it's all been weaponized. In every case, it's confirmed it's released by a government. On record, it's admitted. But it's in the back of the paper a few times here and there. And the public keeps hoping. See, they set up the economic implosion after they stage the terror attacks and get the grid in place, the control grid, the straitjacket on humanity. But if you free your mind, you can slip out of it. They're testing the waters. They've got their thumb to the wind, their finger to the wind. And if they think you're going to go along with it, they will green light their operations. a lot of people marvel. They can't believe this show's for real. They can't believe that I'm for real, because they can't imagine someone with this, in this prominent of a fashion, would actually get up and fight these people if I actually believe they're as evil as I'm saying. Yes, they're as evil as I'm saying. But if you had logic, you would know, of course it's for real. Look at the history. Look at what we've been right about. Look at all the facts. Look at how it's all mainstream news now, but with their spin on it. I know that I have no future and no chance of a future if these people aren't beaten. I know they've done tens of thousands of declassified tests of chemicals, biologicals, radiologicals, killing U.S. citizens, other citizens around the world, and their own troops. I know they've staged hundreds of admitted terror attacks. I know they murdered hundreds of millions of people last century. And frankly, I'm into humanity. I know I live forever. Just like my ancestors lived through me, as long as the species continues and these globalists don't wreck it and don't completely alter what we are, I live on through those that come. I am steadfastly committed and tied in to my species, and I love you. And I am going in and going in full throttle. X-foils locked in attack position. So focus. Engage in the info war. We'll cover Cheney in detail when we get back, and cover a lot of other news on the economy. Stay with us.
You've come to fight as free men. And free men you are. What will you do with that freedom? Will you fight? We will run, and we will live. Die. Fight, and you may die. Run, and you'll live.
At least a while.
And dying in your beds, many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!
This is your chance, all of you out there who said you never turn your guns in. They've got gun bills introduced that basically ban everything. Without courts, without judges, anything. They're openly, publicly in the news, building giant FEMA camps everywhere, merging the local police and military with them. They're openly saying brace for more terror attacks. Foreign banks are openly announcing world government and stealing tens of trillions of dollars and telling us we've got to pay it all back with interest to them. Paying them to steal it all. What you going to do about it? You got to get the word out so people know who the real enemy is. If the people move in asymmetrical info war, at the ground level, the force multiplication of exponential info will be so massive it will smash the enemy. They are already in deep trouble. They're already countering everything we're talking about here with PSAs and propaganda TV commercials everywhere. They know. They have congressional hearings admitting they're losing all credibility. They're openly naming 9/11 truth as an enemy of the state because we fight for the Republican truth and justice. They have called us out, and they admit in their own councils that they are in danger and that they are not invincible. They have analyzed the organic attack profile that we have launched against them, and they understand that if you move against them, they will fall. By the very nature of their attack against us, it is so huge. It is so over the top. It is so incredibly obvious and ridiculously evil. Ridiculously just incredible. Hundreds of newspapers openly announcing world government, saying the very banks that engineered the collapse, you'll pay carbon taxes to them and they'll control every financial institution, major corporations with carbon taxes, and bureaucrats that work for them, and open private brigades of tattletale squads and environmental squads under the president, and then governmental brigades, and then giant domestic military that the Pentagon now announced 2 days ago, confirming everything we warned you about. It's here, man. They're marching on us. And they'll try to put out their propaganda that, well, we're not marching against you. This isn't an assault. We're your friends. Balderdash. Poppycock. This is a fraud. I mean, how could we not be fighting this? How could we not be saying no to it? All it has is that cloak of it's our government. It's our government. It's corrupt, but it's still our government. It is not your government. It has been hijacked. The state governments, the federal government, are fully under international treaty and agreement and have handed over all their authority. You know, Obama said during the campaign he was going to have this big Buy America initiative. And then he came out and said, oh, don't worry, that was just rhetoric. Besides, that would violate the World Trade Organization agreement we signed. That's right. The government can't even say it has a Buy America initiative. See, there's no sovereignty there. They create the World Trade Organization in 95. And within a few years, Congress had passed laws signing over all its authority. But it's a fraud. Just like they passed a law October 3rd last year, ceding all authority over to private offshore banks where everything is secret and nothing can be looked at or reviewed. And the Federal Reserve, one of the board members, was in front of Congress last week saying, I'm not going to tell you where the trillions went. And congressmen are on record saying, where is the money? I don't have to tell you, punk. And that's a fraudulent contract. A real contract to stand up in court has to be fair. It has to have compensation. And it can't be a fraud. That's like if somebody can trick your 12-year-old son or daughter at school to sign a contract, signing over all their money, all their wealth, all their intellectual property in their entire life, it's a fraudulent contract. If you trick an adult into signing a fraudulent contract, it can't stand up. It's a fraud. Offshore banks come in here and pay off the Congress to sign over all its authority on trade to an offshore private board. And they just do it. That's what the Pentagon's there for now. Thomas Barnett, the big Naval War College expert, he goes on C-SPAN and admits it. That they work for Madison Avenue and the big banks and Wall Street. I set him up for the show one time, and right before the show, he checked out who I was and said, no, I'm not coming on to John running the show right now. So we called Barnett. I called him during a break, and I said, why don't you come on? He said, I'm not going to grace and give validity to anything you say. I'm not coming on your show. And I said, your new world order will be defeated. We're going to stop world government. And he's just like, keep on praying. Keep on hoping. And like cackled like a witch. And I said, I commit before God we're going to defeat you. And he just went, yeah, and hung the phone up. I mean, you get on the phones with these guys and say, we're going to defeat global government. We're going to defend the republic. And they're just, keep on dreaming. Keep on dreaming. We run this thing. We're in control. But to the public, it's all, oh, the children, the terrorists are going to attack with guns. Just turn in the firearms. Just let us have some reasonable gun control for the children so they're safe. Let us ban whatever we want and register everyone. And then by fiat, ban anyone we want from owning a gun and ban any guns we want. Sign over to international bodies and UNIDIR at the UN to control us through treaty. Oh, we just want to be your friends. And we're the government. Oh. Just turn the guns in and everything will be fine and then you'll be safe. You'll be safe. We want to protect you. We're the government. We're the nice people. We're Rahm Emanuel, Nancy Pelosi, and Dick Cheney, and Secretary of Defense Gates. There you go. Give me that gun. There. There now. Now these nice men in black uniforms are going to take care of you.
But wait, you said I'd be safe if I did this.
You are safe. Safe to be my slave if I choose to allow you to live.
That is literally the spirit we're dealing with.
Fool. Fool, weak-minded, now you will die. imagine the Bill of Rights, the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence that our forebears built to defend against tyranny, built to strengthen liberty as a fortress. Now its walls pulled down, its battlements crushed, its doors rammed open. But still, we're here inside Fortress Liberty. We could still defend the breaches. But instead, the enemy has its own agents above us leading the citadel. Stand down, it's your friends. There's no army at the gates. There's no assault. There's no New World Order. Don't listen to conspiracy theorists. Those of you at the walls, at the holes, at the breaches, stand back, lay down your swords. There's no army there. And we say their catapults, their siege engines have knocked holes. There are their forces just 10 feet ahead, waiting for us to stand aside. Silence, there is no assault. Listen to the fool. Who is he to speak? But now the enemy is pouring in through the breaches. The public did stand down, not all of them. And so they're in the news going, yes, there's an army here to protect you. Lay down your arms. Yes, yes, yes. But wait, 5 minutes ago you said there wasn't an army there. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. There was a crisis in the castle. There were traitors within that tore down the walls, and now the army is here to arrest them.
Well, wait a minute. The traitors you're talking about are the ones that warned us that you were pulling down the walls.
Silence! Arrest that one as well! He is with the enemy.
That's what they did. They said, there's no New World Order.
There's no globalism. There's no New World Order. There's no plan for a North American Union. There's no plan to take your guns. There's no plan for foreign banks to take over.
And then now, all over the place, they announce, oh, yes, a huge central foreign bank to run everything, to save the economy, and we'll pay our taxes to the foreign bank, and it'll all be secret what they do. And the New World Order's real, but it's good. All over the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Times of London, London Guardian. Articles with headlines like, and now for world government. And the New World Order to the rescue. And their readers are commenting in the comment pages, going with thousands of comments, well, wait, you said this didn't exist. And I thought those people were kooks, but now this article says it does exist. But I guess maybe they're saying this will fix the economy. I want my 401k to survive. And they're saying only by rolling it into a larger governmental union can that happen. I guess maybe I'm for it then. But others are going, wait a minute, you said this didn't exist all the time. It's the banks that are doing all this. They're the ones that engineered this. What are you talking about? And then they'll write other sub-articles or comments going,
you just don't know what's needed. You have lack of vision. You're small-minded. You want to go backwards in time, not forwards.
So now they've imploded the United States like a corpse that's cooling. It's still warm, but it will soon become ice cold. We live inside the corpse. It can still be resurrected, but only by you becoming extremely focused, informed, and animated. To see the country covered with ticks and fleas and mites feeding and sucking on it, and now the color went out of its pink flesh, it turned white and then blue. Now it begins to rot. The lips pull back from the teeth. The eyes no longer have any life in them. Become like dark jelly. And the ticks climb over, celebrating and preening and blowing their trumpets. They've opened the door and an army of bigger, more disgusting ticks comes toddling in. Swaying, filled with the blood of all the third world nations they've smashed and destroyed and murdered and euthanized and injected with cancer viruses, celebrating that, we're pulling it down! We're pulling the Republic down! All we did in the Soviet Union, all the tens of millions murdered, soon we'll truly sup on blood! We'll dine on man flesh tonight!
Soon you will taste the blood of Americans. Soon you will dine on them. Soon you will pull their children away from them as they beg and plead. What say you, throngs of vampires, of soulless cretins of Satan? What say you to our great victory over the Republic? What say you? And they cheer, yes, yes. Soon we will stage the final terror attacks. Soon we will completely smash the Republic, and soon they will beg and plead, and you, your dark spirits, will be able to feed all the ancient spirits of evil that inhabit this throng, this horde, these legions of darkness, will be able to sup on the terror and pain of the American people. The ancient enemy of the New World Order will soon be in our control, and the mass murder of these enemies will be greater than our supping, our feeding in Russia and China and Germany and Africa and Latin America. Soon we will kill with wanton abandon. Soon we will revel in their blood.
I see the enemy. I can stare right past the New World Order's veils. I know their spirit. And what you just saw was nothing more than a mirror into the heart of darkness. Into what you face. Your impoverishment is certain. Your enslavement is near. Your death, for many of you, is a guaranteed, a guarantor, unless you rise in every way known to you. Unless you let the spirit of the living God inhabit you, and unless you say a prayer that you commit yourself to whatever danger, you commit yourself into the God of life's hands and ask the great creator to empower and to breathe life into your limbs and into your soul and into your mind and commit yourself to the fight against darkness, that is the only escape. And it may not be a physical escape, but it is a guaranteed spiritual escape and an eternal escape. The devil's greatest trick was to teach the public that he didn't exist. And that's what they've done. Even if you're an atheist, notice how they've taught you there's no good and evil. They wrote books like Beyond Good and Evil. They teach you there's no moral compass, so you will stand down. So you are rudderless, but they have their moral compass. Death and destruction and eternal domination, the high priest of power, always pressing on the nerve of power, always tearing apart the innocent, the begging, the pleading. It's not about state control. It's not about even them running things. It's about attacking goodness. Everything they build is to savage goodness and honor and beauty. They hate it. The darkness runs from the light. And they have been building towards their great work, sucking down the United States, using its remnants as fodder, as coal in their blast furnace, to roll forward their great siege engines of destruction, their warmocks, their battering rams, to tear down the few remaining countries in the world that have not fallen to the ultimate evil. If you are in the military, you serve the greatest evil ever known. Period. You may not be an evil person, but you are in an evil government. You are in an evil army. If you are a policeman, most cities have fully fallen to the evil. They have delusional, weak-minded people running their systems. You are serving evil. And you say, but things will fall apart if we're not here. That's right. They've built a system. They have built a degenerate system where they are needed. Why are they destroying the economy now? To bring in more domestication, more control, to tie down the people so they can feed on us. They are spiritual vampires. They are soulless black holes who only exist to tear down innocence. They are your mortal enemy, and they are here among us, and their numbers swell. But our numbers, and he that is in us, is greater than he who is in the world.
Some folks are born made to wait to fly. The red, white,
back live.
Some folks are born silver spoon in their hand.
Ooh. Lord, don't they help themselves?
Don't they help themselves? The tax man give them the key to the land. And what the wild is nothing left.
And they don't even pay taxes themselves. Cheney warns of new attacks terrorizing the public. In an interview with Politico, Cheney unyieldingly defended the Bush administration's support for the Guantanamo Bay prison and coercive interrogation terrorist suspects. As he asserted that President Obama will either backtrack on his stated intentions to end those policies or put the country at risk. You keep the torture going, the secret arrest, or the risk. In ways more severe than most Americans, and he charged many members of Obama's own team, understand, when we get people who are more concerned about reading the rights to an Al-Qaeda terrorist, you mean a pot smoker or a woman who raises her voice to police, than they are with protecting the United States against people who are absolutely committed to doing anything they can to kill Americans, then I worry. Oh, Cheney, you care so much about us. Protecting the country's security is a tough, mean, dirty, nasty business, he said. You got to work on the dark side. Remember that quote from Cheney? You got to work on the dark side sometimes. These are evil people. It takes one to know one, doesn't it? And we're not going to win this fight by turning the other cheek. Citing intelligence reports, Cheney said at least 61 of the inmates who were released from Guantanamo during the Bush administration, that's about 11 to 12%, have gone back into the business of being terrorists. Yes, popping up on CIA front websites. That was the whole point. They took innocent people there and turned them into operatives. The 200 or so inmates still there, he claimed. I even said on air they were going to have them popping up on TV, and they did. I just got these people figured out, man. Oh, it's sick. Be able to look right into their minds. The 200 or so inmates still there, he claimed, are the hardcore whose recidivism rate would be much higher. Lawyers for Guantanamo detainees have strongly disputed the recidivism figures, asserting that the Pentagon data have inconsistencies and omissions. How do you know they're guilty if they haven't been tried? I mean, this is ridiculous. And then the author of Bone Crusher, oh, Jawbreaker, we had him on, the CIA section chief over Afghanistan, admitted that they would just go grab innocent 14-year-old kids and put them in there. Cheney called Guantanamo a first-class program and a necessary facility, that it's operated legally and with better food and treatment than the jails and inmates in native countries. But he said he worried that instead of sitting down and carefully evaluating the policies, Obama officials are unwisely following campaign rhetoric and preparing to release terrorism suspects or afford them legal protection. So what does this do? This is Cheney. See, oh, this is play acting. They've left all the key globalists in. They've brought in the Clinton people. They've left Gates and all these other neocons in. All these neocons like Max Boot and others are saying we love Obama now. All of this is going on and happening. And then Cheney comes out and says Obama isn't getting tough on terrorists, and that makes his stance, which is really the same one, look good to liberals. See, that's how the left and right paradigm works. They give each other political cover. This will energize Obama's base. All right, I'm going to get more into this, but for 30 minutes we're going to have a guest on, going in on the horn, getting into all the illegalities going on, including Secretary of State Clinton.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Eugene Volek is our guest for the next 20 minutes or so. He's a Gary T. Schwartz Professor of Law, UCLA Law School. And we've heard about Hillary Clinton being in the Senate, voting for a pay raise for the executive, and under the Constitution, you're not supposed to be able to serve if in the term right before that you voted yourself a pay raise in the executive. That's basically how it boils down. And there's other things like if you're an executive in government, you're not supposed to go overseas and get involved in policy with private groups unauthorized by the State Department or whatever, and they do that with the Bilderberg Group and other things. So I wanted to talk to him about how they get away with not following this. I saw him cited in the Judicial Watch case that they filed against Hillary Clinton. Judicial Watch files lawsuit challenging Hillary Clinton appointment on behalf of State Department Foreign Service officer. So that's why we have Eugene Volokh on with us today, UCLA law professor. Sir, thanks for coming on.
Very much my pleasure.
What's really going on here? How does Hillary get away with this?
Well, so the Constitution says that no senator shall, during the time for which he was elected, be appointed to any civil office, such as, for example, the cabinet, which shall have been created or the emoluments whereof shall have been increased during such time. So what happened was that Congress increased the salary for Secretary of State during the time that essentially during Senator Clinton's latest term, but then it decreased the salary for that very same office when it looked like Senator Clinton was being appointed. So the question is whether that situation where the emoluments of the office shall have been increased during such time because they were once increased, even though later decreased, or whether that doesn't constitute emoluments having been increased because, on balance, after the plus and the minus, the emoluments are precisely the same as at the start of her term. That's the constitutional question.
So it's a letter of the law versus spirit of the law question.
Well, it's not really clear what the spirit of the law is. You might say the spirit of the law is to avoid any possible incentive for legislators to increase salaries.
I'm no constitutional law scholar like yourself, but it seems this is the supreme law of the land. It needs to be honored. So don't you want to go on the more conservative side and say that she shouldn't be able to do this?
Well, remember, the Constitution doesn't just have this provision. The Constitution also has, in Article 2, another pretty important provision, which is that the president shall have the power to appoint officers. So the Constitution quite deliberately creates a scheme during which the president can choose those people whom he wants to serve and implement his policy. So on the one hand, it gives the president this power. On the other hand, it limits the power.
So it's
not clear to me.
That
the limitation should somehow be read extra assertively as opposed to the grant of power being read extra assertively. I think we should read both of them reasonably, and the question is whether shall have been increased should be interpreted as referring to any increase during that term or just an aggregate increase.
So it's another separation of powers issue where they set it up perfectly to really create gridlock.
No, I don't think that's right. The framers deliberately gave the executive very broad authority to select whomever he pleases as his officers, as his cabinet members, subject, of course, to confirmation by the Senate. But they imposed this limitation that in some measure limits it. I don't think that this fosters gridlock. It does affect the kind of salaries that can be paid in the way they can be increased. I will say, if you do care about the spirit of the law, it's not clear to me that the spirit of the provision has been violated here either. That it's not like Senator Clinton is getting any extra money in her pocket because of the raise. In fact, the whole point of the diminution of the salary when she was about to be appointed is to make sure she doesn't get any extra money.
What about the letter of the law? We'll come back and talk about that on the other side. And then I want to pick your brain about a few other constitutional issues as well. We appreciate our guest joining us. He is a UCLA Law School professor. We'll be right back.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Okay, we're talking to law professor, UCLA Law School, Eugene Volokh, about this controversy about Hillary Clinton raising the executive branch cabinet pay and then changing it back. I mean, lawyers have to give some opinion on this, though. I mean, it looks 50-50 down the middle. What is your opinion, sir?
Well, I do think it's a pretty close case. I think that... precedent, in this case legislative rather than judicial precedent, cuts in favor of the constitutionality of this. Fixes to the emoluments problem have been around for several decades, from the start of the 20th century. They've been not uncommon since about 1970. They're actually called the Saxby fix, after the name of a particular appointee for whom such a statute was enacted.
What is
generally
previous?
Both Democratic and Republican administrations have taken advantage of them. There's one exception, the Reagan administration. One reason that Justice Kennedy is on the court now, is that Senator Hatch, who had been considered as an option by the Reagan administration after Judge Bork was rejected by the Senate, Senator Hatch, the Reagan administration concluded, was disqualified, and the Reagan administration's view was that this kind of fix, lowering the salary for the office for the remainder of the term, was not an adequate fix. So there has been some dissent from this view from the Reagan administration, but otherwise both the Republicans and Democrats have generally taken the view that so long as when the person enters the office, the salary is no more than what it was at the start of the senator's term, that's constitutionally permissible. And I think that precedent should have some weight.
Okay, but you say this changed in the last 100 years. What was the previous precedent? Because don't you want to go back to the precedent of the founding?
Well, I think that's right, but I'm unaware of any real past precedent with regard to that. It's not like somebody tried that in 1795 and everybody said, no, of course that's not.
But see, that's what I'm saying. If there isn't this question coming up previously, then it looks like they didn't violate it or questionably violate it previously, so this is something newer. I think that leans towards it being constitutional.
We have the text that is pretty ambiguous. So if there was some precedent at the time of the framing that said the ambiguity needs to be resolved this one particular way, then I agree that would be pretty persuasive. But the thing is, there was no such discussion around the time of the framing.
Well, then why didn't
nobody had raised the issue around the time of the framing. So as a consequence, we don't have framing error precedent.
Yeah.
To the extent we have precedent. No, we don't. If you could point me to something, for all I know, maybe there is something that nobody has identified, but if you could point me to something.
No, I wasn't disagreeing with you. What I'm trying to say here is, if they didn't have this question raised until 90 to 100 years ago, then it sounds like they just did what Reagan did, and if there was any question, then they would do what they did with Hatch and disqualify them from from that position in the in the executive or in the judiciary.
No, it's just that this option wasn't discussed. It wasn't that it was discussed and rejected. It's just that it wasn't discussed. I actually don't know what the pattern of the era was. It may be that it was fairly uncommon for salaries to be raised or for senators to be appointed to those kinds of positions. It's hard to tell. But in any event, there isn't the kind of precedent that I think would show some deliberate judgment as to one interpretation or another. I should say, I thought that it was pretty close. I do think it's pretty close on the text, but I actually lean in favor of thinking that there is no constitutional problem even under the text. Imagine that you're considering a new job, and you're kind of wondering whether there's been an increase in the salary. So you ask, well, has the salary been increased during the past year? And somebody says, well, it went up by $10,000, but then it was cut by the same $10,000. Would you say, yes, the salary has been increased during the past year? I think you probably wouldn't. I think you'd probably say, well, what I care about is the net. What I care about is the result. The result is being paid the same as it was a year ago, so it really hasn't been increased, even though there was a blip up and down.
Okay, so that brings a lot of clarity to this. Why do you think Judicial Watch then is going after Hillary for this?
Well, that's my view, but I think thoughtful, reasonable people can take an opposite view. They obviously feel that that this is impermissible, and they're willing to litigate it. And it'll be interesting to see what happens.
I'm going to get them on to find out what they think about it. Shifting gears, have you heard about the new missing memos that they found in White House computers, giving more clarity to John Yoo, saying the president was basically God and his own separate branch of government, even outside the executive? Fourth Amendment doesn't apply to military operations abroad or the U.S.
The memo titled RE Authority for Use of Military Force to Combat Terrorist Activities Within the United States concludes that the Fourth Amendment protections against warrantless search and seizure don't apply to military operations, even within the operations take place on U.S. soil. What do you think of that?
I haven't read the memo, there is a pretty long-standing unresolved question about the extent to which the Fourth Amendment applies to national security matters. The court has made clear the Fourth Amendment does not apply to searches outside of the U.S. involving people who are not U.S. citizens. That's a case called Verdugo et Quidus. So,
yes.
As to military operations, but also non-military ones outside of U.S.
But, sir,
we
have federal laws like Posse Comitatus saying the military shouldn't even be involved in domestic operations of law enforcement, period. So that right there blocks it.
So there's a case called, which is often called Keith, although it's actually U.S. v. I think U.S. District Court, which asked the question whether the Fourth Amendment applies at all to national security surveillance within the U.S. And the court has left that unresolved. This is in the 1970s. It's not clear whether this is true. My understanding, and I'm not a historian of this, my understanding is that past American practice has been that that national security surveillance was done routinely without any sense of a constitutional problem.
Really? Why were they saying it was illegal then? They had to retroactively pass a law in Congress.
I'm sorry. You're talking about the telephone surveillance question.
Yes.
I think the surveillance that was going on may very well have been a violation of a pre-existing federal statute. I don't think the surveillance of the telephone calls overseas, overseas or half in the U.S. half overseas was a Fourth Amendment violation. It may have been a statutory one.
Do you agree with the last two Supreme Court rulings on the really slashing the Fourth Amendment to bits? I mean, why do we even have it then?
Well, I'm sorry. That kind of assumes the conclusion, right? The Fourth Amendment says there are no the government may not engage in unreasonable searches and seizures. It also says that warrants shall be issued on probable cause.
The
prohibition is an unreasonable searches and seizures. So the real question is, what's reasonable, what's not? Unfortunately, the Fourth Amendment doesn't tell us that.
Wait a minute,
just a
second.
It certainly doesn't tell us the exclusionary rule is required.
Were you advising General Hayden when he was at the NSA? Because he got up in front of law scholars, and they were tearing him up on C-SPAN, and he said, no, it doesn't need probable cause. It only needs to be reasonable. And, you know, that's chopping the amendment up, and then, as Thomas Jefferson said, trying to squeeze a meaning in there that isn't there. I mean the whole body of evidence and precedent is saying you've got to, it's got to be reasonable. You got to oath or affirmation. You've got to have probable cause.
So if you want to talk precedent, especially from the framing era, the fact is that the scope of searches by the federal government in particular during the federal era was pretty narrow. But one area where they did do searches was searches of material being imported into the United States, usually to enforce customs duties and other prohibitions and contraband.
But that's under admiralty.
Well, it's not actually, I think, admiralty law technically, but the federal power to search things coming into the U.S. is part of federal power, just as federal power would be to record conversations that are coming into the U.S. So in any event, there's certainly precedent for the notion, in fact, ample precedent, that reasonableness doesn't always require probable cause. There's also precedent for the notion that sometimes it requires probable cause. I don't think these questions are at all straightforward, nor do I say the government should always win in these cases, not by any means. But I do think we have to recognize the Fourth Amendment says there shall be no unreasonable searches and seizures, and then in a separate clause it says no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause. It doesn't say there shall be no searches without probable cause. It doesn't say there shall be no searches without a warrant. So the court has had to struggle with trying to figure out what this means in light of both the text and historical practice that says sometimes a warrant is required, sometimes probable cause is required, sometimes it's not.
Well, I mean, who can say that there aren't cameras in school bathrooms and there aren't face scanning cameras going up everywhere and the police aren't wearing black uniforms and ski masks? I mean, this country's turning into a police state and people can kind of put perfume on it all day, but it really is a monstrosity.
Well, you know, it's very hard to talk about general matters like
okay,
that.
Okay, here's an example. The Patriot Act is now being used against people, charging them as terrorists, who argue with flight attendants. It's now being used in thousands of marijuana cases, as I'm sure you know, Professor.
So the Patriot Act is a whole bunch of different provisions, some of them having to do something that's straightforward.
Yeah, but they said it was for terrorists.
Well, some provisions are, have to do with terrorism. Some provisions are more broad law enforcement provisions.
Exactly.
The Patriot Act. It's funny how everything has in the past several years has been blamed on the Patriot Act. Sort of that Patriot Act has become a stand-in for the entirety of government law enforcement and anti-terrorism policy. Patriot Act is a bunch of different provisions. If you want to talk about particular ones, I'm happy to criticize some of them.
Okay. Section 802. Changing the definition and broadening it to any action that endangers human life that's a violation of any federal or state law. And I'm sure you know they're using it to get around people's rights all over the United States. Local governments are they're charging people with terrorism for spilling a Bloody Mary on an airplane.
Well, hold on one moment. So Section 802, definition of domestic terrorism. Okay, so it changes a particular provision of the federal Section 231 statute to include acts dangerous to human life that are violation of criminal laws and that appear to be intended to intimidate or coerce a civilian population. I could keep reading. If you can point me to a particular persecution where that's being used in order to go after things that are not dangerous to human life and that are not intended to coerce a civilian population or influence the policy of government, I'd be happy to look at that and criticize that.
Stay there. We will when we come back then. One more segment. Okay, Professor Eugene Volokh, UCLA Law School, is our guest. This is a short segment.
I wish a buck
was. Sir, we just Googled it. In-flight confrontations can lead to charges defined as terrorism, LA Times. January 20th. I mean, you knew Section 802 of the Patriot Act. I know you've seen these. I mean, you're obviously researching all this. And it goes into all the names and people, you know, not even cussing at a flight attendant, spilling a Bloody Mary, marijuana cases. I mean, I can pull up headlines with headlines like State of South Carolina charges thousands under Patriot Act as terrorists. And I mean, you know about that. I mean, I can read the names if you want right now, but I mean, you've got to know about that.
I do know that there's been a lot of coverage, but thanks to the commercial break, I actually looked up the case, which I think you're referring to. It's the LA Times story about Tamara Jo Freeman. It turns out she was not prosecuted under Section 802 of the Act. She pled guilty to violating a pre-existing statute, 49 U.S.C. Section 46504, which is interference with flight crew members in attendance, which sounds like exactly the sort of thing that was at issue. It's not a terrorism statute. It is true the Patriot Act touched that statute in one very narrow way. Mm-hmm. What the Patriot Act did was it changed it to say not just interference, but also attempt to interfere and conspiracy to interfere constitutes violation not of the statute.
Why did they hold her for 3 months without a lawyer? I guess the LA Times is wrong then.
Yes. In fact, actually, I was reading some comments by a lawyer whom I know who is evaluating that says that the LA Times got it quite badly wrong on that. But certainly, if you want to, you can find the plea agreement in which she describes what's going on. And what's described is that she, as I said, it wasn't a Section 802 of the Patriot Act.
What about Section
802? Terrorism conviction.
Okay.
It was interference with flight attendant.
Well, you said that Patriot Act touched it. But what about Section
802? Well, as I said, it touched it in order to say that not just interfering with a flight attendant, but attempting to interfere and conspiring to interfere is also a crime. That's a standard legal principle, that if a crime is something is a crime, so is attempting or conspiring to do it.
What about Section 213?
Okay, what about it?
I mean, go through some of the sections you don't
know. Okay. Well, I'm sorry. So you called me about the Emoluments Clause. I'm happy to talk about this, too, but give me a moment to find this. So Section 213 is authority for delaying notice of the execution of a warrant. That generally speaking, when a warrant is executed, somebody knocks on your door and says, "We're executing this warrant. Please step aside. We're going to search your property." Is that always the rule? Absolutely not. Let's say, for example, they execute a warrant in order to put a wiretap on setting completely aside terrorism in a drug investigation or a mafia investigation. Naturally, they don't inform the people who are being surveilled that the warrant has been executed. So what we're talking about here is we're talking about a slight extension of a pretty long-standing legal principle.
Are you for sneak and peek?
For sneak and peek warrants, the answer is sometimes yes and sometimes no. That's the law has never said you have to disclose every time you serve a warrant.
Sir, I understand.
Because then you can't investigate the mafia.
Sir, I understand that under the mafia rules that a lot of things expanded. But previously, I mean, is the state not getting more power and exercising more power than it had previously? Are you going to?
So the answer is that it's complicated. So. So, for example, let's talk about freedom of speech, which is actually the area I mostly write about.
Free speech zones.
In a very broad restriction. Interesting you say free speech zones. That's what many people talk about with regard to campuses, for example. People talk about campus speech codes, which I strongly oppose and I have forcefully argued against. Up until around 1960 or so, it was generally clear that universities had almost unlimited power to impose whatever speech codes they liked. And in fact, it was basically from the 60s and 70s on that we've gotten more protection for free speech than pretty much we've ever had.
This isn't just being done on universities. And as you know, New York just lost hundreds of lawsuits on their free speech zones.
No, I agree. And I, as I said, I'm a big believer in campus free speech. But if you're saying we're somehow less freer now than before, the fact is up until 1960 or so, it would have been more or less an open and shut case that a university is entitled to restrict whatever it pleases.
We're out of time.
That was bad, but I think we're getting better. Sure.
I mean, things are changing. It can't be denied. I mean, 20,000 combat troops for riot control, and the Army War College says they're getting ready to engage the American people. I mean, this is tyranny. And I don't think there's any way to lawyer around it, but I'm glad you do it, support more free speech. I mean, are you concerned about Posse Comitatus and being eroded? Or
My main area is free speech. I'm not certainly an expert in Posse Comitatus Act. I think that generally speaking, use of military for domestic purposes is a bad idea. Sometimes I think, for example, in riot context, use of the National Guard and similar military auxiliaries, perfectly sensible.
All right, Professor, we appreciate you spending time with us. People can find you at the UCLA Law School website, and I appreciate you coming on.
It's very much my pleasure.
All right, we're going to come back into Dick Cheney saying, brace for terror attacks, give up all your rights. Stay with us. We are back live. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm going to go to your calls. Ryan, James, Carrie, Maggie, Laser, and others that are patiently holding. I also want to start getting into the big stack of news that I haven't gotten to yet. Peter Schiff is going to be joining us coming up in about 26 minutes from now. I just want to say something about that last guest we had on. You know, I've seen most of the Supreme Court and USA Today articles and others say that they're now following international law, that they're now following UN criminal court rulings, European Union court rulings, and saying that's their ultimate authority, not the Constitution Bill of Rights. And if you get classical constitutional scholars on, they would have disagreed with that guy. So that's what a lawyer does. It all sounds reasonable. It all sounds nice, but it's all 180 degrees away from the history of this country and the way those laws, the Bill of Rights and Constitution were interpreted. And liberty is being eroded. I mean, the public schools are little prisons. The Fourth Amendment is waived routinely. They are introducing bills to outright eviscerate the Second Amendment. No one can deny that all of this is happening. But that's how they always do it when they claim, I'm pro-liberty, but we can do sneak and peek warrants. Well, I've had many constitutional law scholars on who completely disagree with that. So remember, just because that guy was saying he agreed with this, agreed with that, doesn't mean that that is the case. He's saying it's his opinion. And, you know, what do we do when we see a Judicial Watch article and they you know, they quote scores of lawyers and findings and court cases. We just picked one out of the bunch and got him on. We could have countless others on with other opinions. But it shows you what they're doing. They're in there just watering everything down with, oh, no, it's not probable cause. It's not, it's reasonable. And the government says it's reasonable. And then all these quotes about how, oh, we're going to use the military in America and no Fourth Amendment's needed. And, you know, I could have brought up to him, okay, there's Marines out at DWI checkpoints now. How is that national security? And he would say, well, I want to see the case, you know. And then he said, well, the Patriot Act's not involved in this case with this woman on a plane except in one area. They held her for 3 months without charges, folks. They held her for 3 months, didn't let her see a lawyer. You know, I could go over these cases over and over again. You know, there was the case of a toy shop in St. Helena, Oregon. Puffer Belly Toys. We had her on. And she bought a magic cube, a knockoff of the Rubik's Cube. They're sold in stores nationwide. They showed up under Homeland Security and the Patriot Act and told her she couldn't tell anybody they were there or she'd be arrested under the Patriot Act because they invoked the sneak and peek provision 213 claiming that it was a gag order. You know, they tried to tell Borders books and libraries. They had to give them all their list of what people bought or what people read, or and if they told anybody, they'd be arrested. But the librarians just revolted and said no, and then it was stopped. This is secret police, and I know the cases, and I know what's going on. And they say, oh, well, it's complicated. No, it's not complicated, ladies and gentlemen. It's not complicated when Rahm Emanuel comes out and says the executive will decide whether to put you on a no-fly list or not. And there's over a million people on this thing now, and it's really a no-buy-and-sell list. When you're on that list through Patriot Act compliance, it waives the Fourth Amendment, everything. The Fifth Amendment, you have to incriminate yourself to get a car loan, a rent car, an apartment, a house, a hotel room, plane tickets. This is a control grid to snoop and track everything we do. Take Know Your Customer. That totally violates the Fourth and Fifth Amendment. Oh, you want to have a bank account with us? Well, sign this contract. See, government is compelling it, so it's not a contract agreement in the free market. It's a fraud. And we'll just watch everything you do on your bank account with no warrant. It's like filling out an IRS form. Well, they go, well, we've got it. I mean, isn't that precedent? No, we didn't have it until 1913. It wasn't made mainstream for all Americans until the 50s. Things are changing for the worse, and they can have lawyers try to polish it up, but it still is what it is. You know what you can't polish, folks. I'm not going to say it. But they have you fill out those tax forms every year that incriminate yourself. It says this will incriminate you. Fill it out, send it to us, and if there's any mistakes, you're a criminal. But government can make all the mistakes they want, and they make themselves exempt from all their laws. You know, people are emailing me and calling me and posting in the comment sections every time we post an article or link to a story about another Obama nominee having to withdraw, whether it's Tom Daschle or all these other people. Geithner, he didn't pay his taxes, but they say that's all right. They're going, Alex, I guess you're really telling the truth. Alex, I guess you're telling the truth. It does look like it's more than 50% of these politicians don't pay taxes or don't pay them. Folks, I'm not making that up. I just haven't pulled up the article from years ago. I mean, seen a bunch of them. Washington Post, Washington Times, where it, you know, the majority of Congress doesn't pay taxes, period, or hasn't paid taxes in years. In fact, let's do this now. Guys, Google this for me. I could Google it, but I can't really talk and focus and Google while I'm on air. I guess I could, but Google, let me give it an exact headline to try to pull it up, one of the many headlines. Hundreds in Congress in tax trouble. Hundreds in Congress in tax trouble, and then it'll say in there the majority of them haven't even paid taxes in years. Hundreds in Congress in tax trouble or hundreds. No, because they're not in tax trouble. Because they're not in trouble. Many in Congress don't pay taxes. That should pull it up. Now, the problem is you're clicking news, so it's all about his latest nominees. somebody can find it if he can't, and put it up. Put it up on the PrisonPlanet.com forum. Finding stuff 4 or 5 years old is hard, but many in Congress don't pay taxes. Try over 60% of Congress not paying taxes. Congress not paying taxes, or congressmen not paying taxes. That should bring it up. Before I go to your phone calls, I do want to encourage all the listeners of this radio show to support this transmission. We are really trying to expand this operation. A lot of fresh faces here in the office. We just hired two new producers. One of them is going to do video work on 50-50. So another video editor / board op / TV director. Another producer / board operator TV director. We just hired two new customer service people, which includes shipping. We're looking at IT people this week doing interviews. We just hired, we're hiring two more salesmen, but they pay for themselves. And then we're going to hire a bookkeeper just to try to keep track of all this insanity, because Mike's overwhelmed trying to do it all. Mike Nelson. And we're going to be able to get a lot more work done, a lot more films, a lot more TV shows, a lot more media, better websites. The website's expanding, new features to the websites, redesign of PrisonPlanet.tv. And this is, I mean, about millions of people fight the New World Order. Certainly the credit goes around to everybody. I'm just saying we are the biggest piece of the puzzle. There's hundreds of big pieces, thousands and millions of little pieces, but on this mosaic of puzzle pieces, we are a huge piece of that. I mean, I talk to folks all around the country, and they say, you woke me up, and everybody I talk to woke up from this radio show or from your films. The vast majority of guests we talk to say that the most support they get, the biggest response they get, isn't on other big national shows, it's this radio show. And that's because of you, the great active listeners. Well, if you think we've gotten a lot done, thanks to listeners spreading the word and taking action, think what will happen if more of you spread the word more, buy more of the books and videos, make copies of my films, give them to people, put them on Access TV. What will happen if you purchase more of the books and videos so we have the capital to get things done? I want to grow exponentially. I don't want to just stay the same size. I've waited too long. I think every day I kick myself for what we could have done if I would have taken action and expanded earlier. We're doing it now during a major implosion, but we're needed. We are needed. Our work is vital, and so we're upping our game. We are expanding everything we do because it's all been so effective. Now, I'm not going to belabor this, but we have the third installment just came out last week, The Eye of the Phoenix, America's Secret History film. We've got it for less than the folks that made it are selling it. So we have it discounted right now at Infowars.com. Eye of the Phoenix, or call toll-free, incredible film. 888-253-3139, 888-253-3139, or again, order at PrisonPlanet.com or Infowars.com. You can see all of my films and a lot of other films we've been authorized to post by the makers at PrisonPlanet.tv, 15 cents a day. Download them to disk, burn them, get them out to folks. Great activist tool, PrisonPlanet.tv. You can even share your passcode with a few folks, but not too many, because it has a limited number that can log on to it via each passcode. So you can share it with 4 or 5 people. Just tell them don't share it. And I'd share it with everybody, but then it would crash our servers, and we can barely pay for it now. We've really expanded the quality of PrisonPlanet.tv. Endgame, Blueprint for Global Enslavement, Fabled Enemies, Terror Storm, Truth Rising, Barry Cooper's films, I'll Never Get Busted Again, Don't Get Busted, the Cop Buster films, all of this available at Infowars.com. And they're great films, informative, and it supports this transmission and what we do here. So please check all that out today. We also have new Tyranny Response Team ball caps for $12.95. We have the little black beanies. We have a new turning response team. We have a lot of new T-shirts we're adding right now. So check out everything at the shopping cart at InfoWars.com or call and find out about discounts and different combos. We have films as low as $5.95 a piece by calling 888-253-3139, 888-253-3139. You can also write to me at 3001 South Lamar, Suite 100, Austin, Texas, 78704. All right, we got about 15 minutes till Peter Schiff comes on. Then we're going to end the economy with him. Let's go ahead and go to your phone calls. Ryan in Georgia, welcome. Hey, come ahead, Ryan. You're on.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm sorry about that.
No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yes, I don't want to digress, but I've been trying to call you since last Friday to tell you this, and I'm actually just getting through now. But I just wanted to tell you what a phenomenal show you had last week Thursday when you had on Jordan Maxwell. Mostly because I didn't know much about him, and after your show, I did some research and to find out that the movie Zeitgeist was based off of him. That actually woke me up and helped me find out about you, so it was just a real full circle to find out more about him and just how important he is about a lot of the stuff that's going on now. And also, I just wanted to say that I checked out a blog site and seen a show that KRS-One did in Austin.
Yes.
And I just want to say that was really huge that you're working with him because gave me a little bit of hope that not everybody is sleeping, and for him to speak out the way he was speaking out about Obama and just what's going on to educate, because he's pretty respected in that realm. So,
well, let me just say this. I want to check into this. We streamed it live, the KRS-One interview at PrisonPlanet.tv last Friday, but that was in medium quality. We stream live in medium quality, so basically everybody with their connection can get it. And so it doesn't overwhelm our servers. But I know last week they uploaded it in super high quality for PrisonPlanet.tv members, but I don't see it up there. Did Paul Watson or did our guys ever post the super high quality KSR-One to PrisonPlanet.tv? You guys call guys call Aaron in here because I see it all over the web with hundreds of thousands of views, and it's in low quality because by the time people copied the medium quality, it looks low quality. So we'll find out what happened with that because I want that KSR-One out there in high quality. That always happens. Some super interview breaks in medium quality, and then it gets all over the web, and then there'll be high-quality versions folks don't even know about. But we're going to have KSR-One back on. He's invited me to be part of a speaking tour if I can. I just don't have the time, really, but I'll at least go to one of them. And we got Professor Griff coming on Thursday, so that's going on.
It was just really good to see him all over the web, just talking. He was going in really in-depth and, of course, talked about you and how important you are. And like I said, it was just a really good feeling to see him talk so much in depth about what's going on. And I just really also want to find out, going back to Jordan Maxwell, it was just a really big moment, and I just really want to know, when are you actually going to go out there to see him so you can try to get this information to us? Because I think what he was talking about was just, it's vital, and I'm just really eager to find out the information that you guys are planning to, to piece together. And just,
well, here's the problem. I've had a skeleton crew, and so I've not been able to do 1/100th of what I would like to. And I've told Jordan, and I'm honored he wants me to make a film with him, that he needs to give me a battle plan, because even when I have a battle plan, it takes a lot of sleepless hours to get a good film made on top of everything else we're doing. And so I left town last Thursday after I talked to him, so I need to call him today on top of everything else and see if he wants to get that done. Also, I generally like working with myself. I mean, I'll go interview people for films and things. And it's not that I don't want to have somebody else honchoing something. It's that I can barely get something done when I'm honchoing it, when I'm driving the train. And time is so short. Time is so short. And so
it was you always have these shows that really for me at least, it just gives me really big chills, going from Steve Quayle to Lindsay Williams, back to Jordan, is like when, you know, these guys announce or they just come on and they speak about really amazing news, and it's almost kind of like they give you information on what these guys are really thinking and the motives that they're planning and trying to accomplish. So that was just another one of the episodes that just really made
I hear
me feel
you.
Like, wow.
I hear you. And we're going to try to get that done with Jordan. God bless you. Take care, Ryan. Oh, make no mistake, the proof's in the pudding. When you listen to this radio show, you get as close to reality as any other media format in the world. I mean, this is it, folks. We don't play games here. We're going live at PrisonPlanet.tv. Simulcasting the radio show in 5 minutes. In fact, John, in about 3 minutes, go ahead and call Peter Schiff. I want to start the show directly with him. Thank you. Where did my guest folder go? Keeping track of this stuff. It's crazy in here. Let's go ahead and take a call from James in PA. James, you're on the air.
Hey, Alex.
Hey.
Thanks for taking my call. I got a statement and a question for you. The first one is that my girlfriend's mom is an RN at a hospital in New York State. I live right on the border. And she told me that the hospital has told them to take all their extra medication and flush it down the toilet. So then you got the news saying that the medication in the water is coming from people urinating it out, which is totally BS because the hospitals themselves are flushing all these pills down the toilet.
I don't, I know they don't like them throwing it in the garbage because people raid the landfills to get the drugs, but they're supposed to incinerate old drugs. I know the abortuaries flush babies down the toilet. Down the sink. I know people don't like it. They put them in blenders. I know folks don't like hearing that, but it's just the facts, what we do to our own humanity. We can rationalize it all day, but it's all about eugenics. They're pushing all over the news now, major offensive launch there. But there are water supplies that aren't connected to sewage, that aren't connected to wastewater, that shouldn't have the drugs in them. And even in the areas where it is connected to wastewater, it's at levels way above what could possibly be in there. Clearly, I mean, sodium fluoride itself is a Prozac-like drug. And so they are drugging the water supply.
I totally agree with you there. My next question is for you about Jordan Maxwell. I've been doing some research on him, and I've come to find that a lot of the stuff that he teaches comes from the mystery religions itself, like Helena Blavatsky. And his name, like, it could be his real name, but... In Helena Blavatsky's Isis Unveiled, Volume 2, she states that the second part of the Nazarene Trinity is this person called Jordanius Maximus, who is the water of life. Through only him can we all be saved. And then if you go on his website and look at the... he has a little thing about researching words. One word is Jordanius Maximus, and there's a little clip next to it that says... Some rabbi sent him this information about Jordanius Maximus, but he's even stated himself that Helena Blavatsky is one of his favorite authors. And I was wondering.
I was about to say, this is what happens. People cover things on the air and in their own books, and then folks get it and say, oh, we found a secret about this person. When the person is openly, that's what he's covering is the mystery religions. That's what he studies. And no, his name is not Jordan Maxwell. He said on air many years ago, you know, that he picked that name up when he was first starting all this because he was getting death threats. So, I'll say things on TV and then they'll grab the clip and say, we found this secret video of Alex when it was me on air or, you know, behind the scenes during the breaks. We skip a lot of them and openly keep talking to folks. Look, anybody and everybody that covers news and information is being attacked and you know, being gone after. We have Jordan on because he's got a lot of key information about the New World Order. And so, of course, he's very popular. People are going to criticize him. And they criticize him even more because it gets to him. So they just do that. I mean, you know, it's research and information. Take from it what you want is really the bottom line. I appreciate your call. Okay, we'll be right back with the news with Peter Schiff. Stay with us.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, and thank you for joining us. We're now simulcasting live at PrisonPlanet.tv in the third and fourth hour of this syndicated radio transmission. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Alex Jones. Our websites are PrisonPlanet.com and InfoWars.com. Peter Schiff of Euro-Pacific Capital will be joining us coming up here in a few minutes. Well, this from Slashdot today, and it's also in several other news articles. Amtrak photo contestant arrested by Amtrak police all over the nation. You'll have a chemistry professor arrested because he has a chemistry set at his house, and a neighbor or a carpet cleaner saw it and thought he was a terrorist. You'll have many famous cases of students who are out doing a photo journalism class of bridges or of buildings or of architecture, period, and they get arrested. This is how they're using the war on terror to create this paranoia. We've had New York police walk up and say, turn your video cameras off during a protest. You could be terrorist. That camera is a gun. So just tyranny. And it goes on to say photographer Dwayne Kurzik was standing on the public platform in New York's Penn Station taking pictures of trains in hopes of winning an annual photo contest that Amtrak had been running since 2003. Amtrak police arrested him for refusing to delete the photos when asked, though they later charged him with trespassing. Obviously, there is a lack of communication between Amtrak's marketing department, which promotes the annual contest called Picture Our Trains, and its police department, which has a history of harassing photographers for photographing the same trains. Not much different than the JetBlue incident from earlier this year when JetBlue flight attendants had a woman arrested for refusing to delete a video she filmed in flight while the JetBlue marketing department hosted a contest encouraging passengers to take photos in flight. Kurzik's blog has an account of the arrest on December 21st and the aftermath, and we're going to get him on the show. And this happens all over the place. I mean, you'll be taking pictures out of the plane window with your little snapshot camera, and I've had the flight attendant walk over and say, don't take pictures in here. And this is all just part of the First Amendment being attacked. It has nothing to do with terrorism and how they're using this to put a chilling effect on free speech and alternative media gathering. And now they're trying to pass a law in England where you're a terrorist if you take pictures of police, period, so you can't videotape them or photograph them beating people up. Okay. Until the bottom of the hour, we have Peter Schiff on with us, and I want to go through some of the economic numbers that are coming out. He and many others have been predicting we could go into a depression in the next few years, but now Mainline, Economist Magazine, and Gordon Brown, Prime Minister of England yesterday, said that we're already in a depression. So Peter Schiff of Euro-Pacific Capital, do you think we're already going into a depression?
Well, unfortunately, I think we are. I think the government is leading us into a depression. I don't think it had to be a depression. I think it had to be a very severe recession because we have a lot of problems in our economy that have been building for more than a generation, but in particular during the Greenspan era and since the bursting of the dot-com bubble, we have some serious imbalances that need to be addressed. And a lot of these problems are the result of monetary and fiscal mismanagement and excessive regulation. We need to allow the market to work and to function. And unfortunately, the government is not doing that. The government is simply, exacerbating the problem. They're leading us deeper into debt. They're making our economy less efficient and less productive. And they are in the process of creating a depression, which I think will be an inflationary depression, which is going to be particularly painful for ordinary Americans.
Peter Schiff of Euro-Pacific Capital. We're going to break. When we come back, though, you predicted this years ago. And so you've been getting a lot of media attention because of your accurate predictions. I want to get your projections, your forecast into the future of how you see this unfolding with the current government operations we see now versus what could happen if we tried to put the brakes on their spending. So stay with us. We'll be right back with Peter Schiff. We'll also cover some of the latest economic news. Stay with us.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are live. Actually, we have Peter Schiff with us for the rest of the hour. We'll open the phones up for your financial questions at the bottom of the hour, 1-800-259-9231. We'll be giving out Mr. Schiff's Euro-Pacific website as well, and we'll post it on screen for everybody out there that is watching. Okay, Mr. Schiff, I think it's important, since we've got plenty of time with you today, and we're thankful for that. Tell us a little bit about yourself, some of the predictions and projections, forecasts you've made accurately. I think it's important to recap those. I could go over some of them, but you could do it better than I because you made them. And then some people take seriously what you're saying. Let's move forward then into your forecast on the depression and exactly why that's being exacerbated and accelerated by the policies, like a $50-something million bailout. They're talking about for the auto industry, so Ford and Chevy and others can move to Brazil. Peter Schiff.
Yeah, well, I mean, basically, I've been pointing out for a number of years the problems, the underlying problems with our economy, and you know what we're experiencing now is not the problem. What we're finally experiencing are the consequences of the problem. And the problem has been building, as I said, for years and years. And basically, you know, the roots of the problem, you can probably trace them back to abandoning the gold standard in 1971. Because when we took the dollar off the gold standard, and the world continued to accept the U.S. dollar as the reserve currency, as if it were still backed by gold, that put us in a unique position as a nation where we could pay for our imports by printing money. We didn't have to pay for our imports with exports, and we didn't have to pay for them with gold. We could just print money. And that really started this process that culminated, you know, in after the dot-coms, I think, from 2001, 2002, until 2008, we basically went through the mania of the blow-off stage of this phony economy. But what happened is we began to deindustrialize, and we began to move into a service sector economy because we were able to import all the things that we didn't produce by printing money and sending it abroad, and our creditors were willing to hang on to the money we printed. And they didn't look to actually spend it on real stuff. And so the economy began to evolve, this consumer-based economy. But in order to keep it growing, we had to keep on taking on ever-increasing quantities of debt, which the world was willing to supply us. And, you know, of course, with the housing bubble, which when I was very critical there, that's what enabled Americans to borrow money on an unprecedented scale. I mean, we raised it, you know, to an art form where we were borrowing, you know, literally trillions of dollars from the world, and we were just blowing it all on massive consumption. And our trade deficit, you know, during this decade, you know, went from, you know, what used to be a pretty bad, you know, 10, 12 billion a month up to 60 billion, 70 billion a month. And, this was completely unsustainable. And then, you know, you had, you know, half of the income from the S&P 500 was being generated from finance, from financial services. And it was all an illusion. And I saw all the risks that were being taken on Wall Street and all the speculation on Main Street. I knew that our whole banking system was a house of cards because I knew that the assets were phony because the assets were mortgages. And I knew that the people who were borrowing money, there's no way they could pay it back.
Sorry to interrupt you. Your voice is so strong. Will you back off your phone?
Oh, okay, sure.
Thank you. Sorry to interrupt you. Absolutely. But, and then on top of that, the big banks and brokerage firms then took the security-backed assets, the mortgage loans, and sold those as basically good as gold.
Well, they had to sell them because we don't have any savings. I mean, this whole securitization process was a way to put together American borrowers with all the world's savers. I mean, you can only borrow money from somebody who saved it. And so this process enabled Wall Street to put the Japanese and the Chinese together with the Americans. But all we were doing was borrowing money. And, you know, the Chinese, and, you know, they were dumb enough to lend it to us. They thought they were going to get it back. But, you know, they're not going to get it back because we spent the money. We have no way of paying it back. It wasn't put to a productive use. It was spent. But anyway, so I knew that this was going to end badly. This phony credit bubbled economy based on consumer spending and debt was going to collapse, and that's what's begun. Now, when I was warning about it, I was more fearful not of the collapse, but of the things that the government would do to try to interfere with the collapse, to try to reflate the bubble, to try to return us to the consumer spending economy that is the source of our problems. And that is exactly what the government is trying to do. And in so doing, what they're really doing is pouring gasoline on a raging fire, and it is going to, you know, basically engulf the entire country and burn it to the ground. And every time the fire gets bigger, they're going to pour more gasoline on it. What we need, the only way that America is going to get back on the right track, is to have consumers stop spending. We need to rebuild savings. We need capital to be made available to business, not government, so that business can use it to produce the factories of the future, to employ the workers that are losing their jobs in services and finance. We need to allow the free market to work, and it's going to involve a lot of pain because all this artificial living, all this living beyond our means and indulging our every whim and buying things we can't afford, that's got to come to an end. And it's not going to be an easy process. And during the process, asset prices are going to be marked down. Stock prices need to go lower. Real estate prices need to go lower. People, that's not going to sit well with a lot of people who thought they were going to get rich on asset appreciation, but we need to go back to reality. But what the government is going to do is they're going to prevent all this from happening. They're going to prevent us from getting out of this hole. They're going to dig it deeper. They're trying to encourage more reckless consumption. The entire purpose of the stimulus package and all the bailouts is to keep Americans going to the mall, to keep us reaching for our charge cards, buying more stuff. They want us borrowing more money to buy more houses. They want us borrowing more money to buy more cars. That is the exact opposite of what we need to do. And what they are setting up is the real crisis that I've been warning about. It's going to be a collapse in the value of the dollar. It's coming. It's coming soon. And when the dollar collapses, you're going to see interest rates spiral out of control. You're going to see consumer prices spiraling out of control. And then we're going to be in a real crisis. Because, see, right now, the government is bailing everybody out and easing the pain. But when the bond market collapses, it's the U.S. government that's going to need to bail out, and there's nobody big enough to do it.
Peter Schiff, what is the time frame? I mean, I know these are liquid and move back and forth, but most of the experts we talk to, like Dr. Paul Craig Roberts and Bob Chapman and the head of the Newark Business School and countless others, say that what government is doing is accelerating the time frame and bringing the total collapse, the what I call hyper-stagflation, closer to reality.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. It's hard to say, you know, exactly timing. I mean, timing is a very difficult thing to do, especially when there's so much irrationality in the world and there's so much manipulation, there's so many people with vested interests. So you can never know the timing. Look, we had this huge dollar rally in 2008. That bought us a lot of time. I didn't anticipate that we'd have that big dollar rally. Maybe in hindsight it's something I should have anticipated because in the short run, it seems like the opposite of what should happen always happens because the majority of people seem to always get it wrong and they do the wrong thing when they initially are confronted with information. But once this dollar rally really loses steam and begins to fall apart, it's going to take on a lot of momentum.
And that's
now,
starting
we can
to happen.
See what's happening. Yeah, look at the bond market. I mean, this is that the bond market has been dropping every day this year. In fact, so far, 2009 is the worst year in history for the U.S. bond market. It's the worst year, even though we've only finished 1 month of the year.
And
if
the
this
worst,
continues, this could be the beginning of the unraveling.
And the worst year in stocks ever.
Well, it's the worst January in stocks ever, yes. But it's not the worst year. But it's already the worst year in bonds. I mean, January was worse than any entire year that preceded it. That's how bad it was.
Okay, so what's the furthest it could be pushed out until I mean, the layoffs, hundreds of thousands a month, the store shutdowns, and now the bubble in the real estate market is starting to implode. The credit card debt is starting to implode. I mean, as all these things combined with the already circling black hole, what, a year till it's riots in the streets, 2 years?
I don't know. I mean, I've talked about the potential for riots, and I think that exists, and looting, and I think what would cause that would be shortages of food and blackouts, and I think that it is possible that we will see that because the government is unleashing massive inflation, and ultimately the inflation that they're creating is going to cause surging prices, particularly for things like food and energy. And if the government is going to stick to form, they are going to attack the symptoms and not the disease, which is the rising prices. And the only way governments ever attack rising prices is through price controls, which is what we did in the 1970s. And since we're repeating all the mistakes of the 1930s, I'm sure we'll repeat the mistakes of the 1970s. And if we have price controls, we're going to have shortages. And if we have shortages, we're going to have problems. We're going to have crime. And, of course, I think it's going to come at a time, you know, where the cities are not going to have the money and the resources to pay for additional police protection. If not, they might have to cut back on the police protection they have now. And obviously, you know, the criminals will figure that out.
Well, Peter, that was my next question. When we come back, I want to get into that. The states are on the verge of bankruptcy. CalPERS, for those that don't know, the big pension fund system in California, formerly one of the biggest economies in the world, what, number 8 in the world itself, just that fund, not California itself, but just the fund. They're talking about that going bankrupt. They're doing emergency rainy day funds just to continue the checks going out. The welfare checks are in danger of not going out. That'll be a riot within a week, the Pentagon has predicted in reports they've done. So I want to talk to Peter Schiff about that when we get back. I'm Alex Jones. Our websites are Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com. We come back, we'll tell you Peter's website as well and put that on screen. He's with Euro-Pacific Capital and has done a great job in the last decade predicting exactly what we're entering into and what the government would do as a response. We'll also get into a lot of other issues as well. Stay with us. Europac.net is our guest website, Europac.net. There's also a gorgeous website pushing him for president that fans have put up. This is one of the guys that Ron Paul has said is one of the people he learns a lot from. Peter Schiff, again, is our guest. Peter, let's get into it right now. You talked about police agencies not having enough money. They swole the size of police agencies from 500,000 to several million in the last decade. Now the police admit they're out writing more tickets and fines and fees to try to raise money. But of the people, you can't squeeze blood out of a turnip or a stone, as the old sayings go. The states are talking about going bankrupt. The pension funds, the state pension funds, the police pension funds. I mean, if all of that goes bankrupt, what are we looking at here?
Yeah, look, it's tough. Look, this is the natural consequence of all this debt, all this borrowing to consume. And that's how come, you know, our economy was phony. We were paying for it by going into debt. And everybody, you know, when I would bring this up and talk about all the debt, people would criticize me by saying, look, I'm only looking at half the balance sheet. I'm not looking at all the assets. And so we have all these assets, so the debt is okay. Well, what were the assets? The assets were stocks and real estate. But what good are those assets? I mean, it's not like we can hock them all to the Chinese. You know, we have to pay interest on the debt. And if we can't service the debt, it doesn't matter about the assets. And, of course, when you have to sell your assets, the prices collapse. I mean, our houses are only worth a lot of money, assuming that nobody wants to sell them. But the minute everybody needs to sell their house, there's nobody to buy it. What's your house worth? It's worth a fraction of what we were pretending it was worth when we tried to pretend that all this debt didn't matter. But it does matter. And now the bills are coming due, and we can't pay. In the meantime, you know, what made us wealthy in the first place, our industrial might, our ability to produce, you know, that's gone because we've been living off the productivity of everybody else as we've been accumulating all this debt.
Looking specifically at CalPERS out in California and other states, where do you see the biggest problems? What do you see to be the next domino to fall? States go going bankrupt. I saw a headline in mainstream news yesterday of 48 states may go into bankruptcy.
I think California is, I think, on the verge, if they haven't already done so, of paying some of their bills with IOUs. And, you know, ultimately, I think Barack Obama, you know, and the government have mentioned a desire to give money to the states. And I think some of this new bailout bill, stimulus bill, whatever they call it, that they're passing, I think it has some money for the states so that the states don't have to make cuts. Well, that's the wrong thing to do. The states need to make cuts. The states are bloated. You know, we need reductions there. If we're just going to print money and give it to the states so they don't make necessary cuts, we're just making the underlying problems worse.
And that's just going to inflate the currency more, isn't it?
Well, that's all they're doing. They have to print money. Now, they're hoping that they can keep borrowing the money from the Chinese and the Japanese and the Saudis. But the world is suffering right now from all the money they loaned us in the past that we can't pay back. Should they sign up to loan us even more?
Could it get to Zimbabwean level?
It could. I mean, there's no difference between our money and theirs. It's just paper. And I'm hoping it doesn't get that bad, but it will get that bad if we do not change course. We need to make a conscious decision to reverse our course and to accept whatever pain the recession is going to dole out, because there's no way around it. It's trying to avoid the pain, trying to accept from dealing with reality. That's why you end up with a hyperinflation scenario, because you refuse to bite the bullet. And so instead, you die from the wound.
Yeah, I've got a list of the $900 million now stimulus package, and it's for cities to build new golf courses. Like right here in Austin, a river walk.
Think about it. Think about how ridiculous that sounds. We are in an economic, we're in trouble, right? We've borrowed and spent too much money. We need to, you know, to dig in our horns. We need to sacrifice. We need to save more and stop spending. And what's their solution? Build more golf courses? I mean, they got to be crazy. How is another golf course going to make us more productive? We need a factory. We need to make things. We don't need more golf courses. You know, we've got plenty of golf courses.
Well, people aren't going to have money to spend at the golf course.
Well, we don't have the money to build the golf courses. How are we going to use the golf courses to pay for our exports? I mean, are the Japanese really going to fly over here to play golf in our courses so that we can pay? You know, this is nonsense.
Well, also, this is a global implosion. I mean, Japan's on the edge of the abyss. Russia's plunging into it. China's growth rate projected to go from 10 to 4%.
I mean, more golf courses. I mean, why don't we build more polo fields? And how about marinas so we have more places to put our yachts?
Sir, that's actually in there.
Broke.
I mean, it's actually in there for yacht marinas, so they are going to do that. Because, you know, they've stolen all this money from us. They're going to need to park their yacht somewhere. Peter Schiff, stay with us. We'll be right back with more key information and your calls.
From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
TheObamaDeception.net. That's our new website for the Obama film that I'm making. Your phone call's coming up here in a few minutes with Peter Schiff, acclaimed economic researcher, writer, and of course he also manages a multi-billion-dollar fund. Mr. Schiff, specifically Barack Obama, whether he's a nice guy or a bad guy, we know he's appointing more globalists, more of the same people. Timothy Geithner, who engineered much of the economic crises we now see, who lobbied to get rid of the different acts in the 1990s that allowed all of this derivative manipulation to expand, as you know, but for the audience, he is now coming out and saying Obama warns of catastrophe without stimulus, without these, literally here in Austin, Frisbee golf courses. You couldn't make this up. Yacht clubs, political payoffs, buying off churches. I mean, this is just a big political payoff, the biggest pork ever seen. Of course, it's this $900 billion is a distraction compared to the trillions the Federal Reserve has taken. They won't say where it's gone, but I want you to talk about that separately. Barack Obama, A, what do you think of what he's doing? You know, he lobbied for the original banker bailout, and now he's criticizing the banker bailout. I mean, how hypocritical is that, him claiming he's not involved in the October 3rd banker bailout, but he was actually instrumental in honchoing it through Congress? We have the video clips to prove it of him on the floor of the Senate. And where do you see all this going?
These guys had the guts. I mean, McCain, I was on Kudlow's show yesterday. McCain was on, and you know, he's talking against the bailout, but I mean, he made a point that he stopped his campaign to go back to Washington to vote for it. And, you know, and now he's against it. But, you know, first I just want to correct something that you said. I don't manage a fund. I own a brokerage firm, Euro Pacific Capital. We're a brokerage firm. Individual investors, you know, open up accounts with me. They can invest in foreign stocks, domestic stocks if they want. We sell precious metals. But we're just a full service retail investment firm. I don't manage any money at all.
Got it.
Although I am starting, I just actually set up a registered investment advisor. So it is my intention to start managing money, but I haven't managed any to date, except my own. But in any event, what's happening right now, you know, with Obama and government in general is they are using this economic crisis as a means to get a big government agenda passed. And this is playing right into their hands. It's music to their ears. Politicians love a crisis, especially when they can say the only solution is more government. And unfortunately, the crisis is going to get worse.
Peter, stop.
The more government we get, the bigger the problems. And of course, that is exactly what the government wants. The worse they make the economy, the more justification they have to get even more powerful and even more government. So
Peter, stop.
They can't lose. The politicians can't lose. The worse they make it, the better they off they are.
Peter, say that again in your own words. You're really overdriving on the phone. I need you to back off again. I'm sorry to stop you. I mean, flesh that out. Take your time explaining that, because that's key, and explain why this is actually good for them but not for the rest of us. Go ahead.
Right. Well, if you look at the government, it's like a parasite or a cancer, and the rest of us, you know, are the host. And, you know, what's good for the parasite is not necessarily good for the host. They want to get bigger, and they're going to feed off of us. And the more government they create to solve the problem, the bigger the problem is going to become. And so the worse they make the economy, the more they create the need for government solutions to solve it. And so the government can't lose in this situation unless, of course, we vote them out. But in general, we won't do that. I mean, Roosevelt proved that. He got elected, what, four times, despite the fact that he kept making the situation worse because he got the voters so fearful that the only thing standing between them and starvation was Roosevelt and the big government. And so the worse they can make the economy and the more dependent we think we are on government, the less likely we are to throw them out. It's like they're the slaves and they're the masters, and they make the slaves think that we're dependent on them. So, and this is a very dangerous time to be an American, because they are going to seize a lot of control and a lot of power, and we're going to lose a lot of individual liberties that we may never get back. And our economy is going to continue to move away from a market-based economy to a centrally planned economy, and economic decisions and resources are going to be allocated and invested not based on individual entrepreneurs seeking profits, but politicians seeking votes. And this is not how to have a vibrant, efficient economy where living standards grow. This is the recipe for disaster.
Yeah, this has not been the free market or American way. And that brings me specifically to the fact they blame this on the free market. They say the free market did this, and then Gordon Brown and Barack Obama come out and say we have to merge the free market with government socialism, with more regulation, when they didn't even follow their own regulations, and when the government paid corporations tax incentives to move offshore. So, I mean, all of this being set up, and now they come in to the rescue for a problem they engineered to begin with.
Yeah, it's always, you know, the free market always takes the blame when you introduce government into the market. And then there's a problem. It's always the capitalism that gets the blame, but it's not capitalism. It's the government mixed in. It's the mixture of socialism and capitalism. See, capitalism doesn't work when government interferes. I mean, there are a lot of natural forces that make capitalism work, but the government comes in and gets in the way of those forces. It circumvents them. And it leads to the excessive risk-taking, the excessive leverage that never would have come into existence, but it were not for government intervention. And, of course, they come into the market and they subsidize something and they tax something else. So they interfere with rational decision-making and they micromanage and they cause businesses and individuals to do things that absent government regulation they wouldn't have done. And so they blow up all these bubbles, and then the bubbles burst. And then when we have a problem, they say, you see, it's because of capitalism. When if it was really a capitalist economy, we never would have had the bubbles, and so they would never have to burst.
Peter, I specifically want you to speak to Obama, though. What was it like for you to watch him on television helping ram through the banker takeover bill that gave him all these trillions and anonymity and secrecy, and then months later they're saying we've got to have another bailout now, and he's on TV criticizing the bankers and brokerage firms for giving themselves record bonuses? I mean, how stupid does he think the public
is?
And
it's like what did they think they were going to do with that money, right? I mean, what did they think they were going to do with it? I mean, you know, they gave them a bunch of money. They didn't think they were going to pay themselves, you know? I mean that's how these guys work. You know, so it's amazing that, you know, it's like, you know, you're playing with, you know, with a snake, and the snake bites you, and you're surprised. You know, I mean, that's what they do.
But more than that, Obama got, depending on which index you look at, Obama got four times the Wall Street money that John McCain got in campaign donations. His cabinet is filled with the very group that engineered under Clinton the changes that we now see coming to fruition. I mean, can you speak to that, to have him claiming he's against the banking establishment and the brokerage firms and the derivatives people when he really is their man?
Yeah, well, look, this is how politicians are. That's politics. You know, and unfortunately, you know, the economic problems that were a consequence of bad government policy, mainly the Federal Reserve. I mean, look at all the new powers that the Federal Reserve has now, specifically because of the problems that they helped create. You know, it's like, you know, all we do is we turn over the keys of the asylum to the inmates, and that's what's going on.
You made a point earlier, but I'd like you to expand on that, and then we're going to take some phone calls, that they love what's happening, that the fact that the crisis is deepening allows them to expand their powers. Flesh that out a bit.
Well, I mean, this is what happens with government. I mean, government, you know, they can grow when there's a crisis or an emergency. I mean, if you look at all throughout history, all the additional powers that the government usurped over the years, all the new taxes that they were able to pass, it was always during some type of crisis, some type of emergency. In general, it's a war, you know, and the governments are generally able to do things in wartime that they can never do in peacetime because people don't oppose them, because they always make it about the war. And therefore, anybody who opposes what they're doing they're trying to make them out like, well, they don't care. I mean, or, you know, how can you oppose new taxes when there are people dying, you know, in a war? I mean, at least you're not on the front. You can at least support the troops by paying more taxes, and they appeal to your patriotism. And so the government's allowed to usurp a lot of power. And then, of course, when the wars end, they never give up the extra power, the wartime powers or the wartime taxes. They just find new ways to spend the money. So once the war is over, they don't have to spend the money on the military, but they spend it on something else. They don't give it back, you know.
Mr. Schiff, was it economic terrorism? Mr. Schiff, I see it as economic terrorism to have Barack Obama, John McCain, and others cheerleading around on television back in October of 2008 saying you've got to pass the banker takeover bailout bill or we're going to have a depression next week. And then they pass the bill on Friday. Bush signs it on Saturday. And the Treasury Secretary says now we're not using it to unclog the subprime mortgages and the derivatives that came out of it. We're not going to tell you what we're going to spend it for. I mean, now they're back terrorizing us again.
Yeah, saying, I mean, it was really basically a bait and switch is what it was, you know, the whole time. And, you know, I criticized the plan when they first proposed it. I said it wouldn't work. Because it was impossible to buy these troubled assets because you'd have to overpay for them. Otherwise, you would bankrupt all the entities you were trying to bail out. So there was no way the government could make a profit on it. But if you remember, the way they sold it to us, you know, when it didn't pass and the Dow Jones dropped about 1,000 points, I think it went from 13,000 to 12,000 or something, they said, aha, you see, the Dow collapsed because we didn't pass it. So now we need to pass it to help the stock market. Well, they passed it, and the Dow is less than 8,000 right now. So obviously, they tried to convince us that we needed to pass that bill because we had to get the stock market to go back up. But, you know, look where the stock market is now, even though we have the bill.
And now they're claiming that the American people are on the hook for these trillions and trillions of dollars in interest to the very banks that we loan the money to, and then the banks, the big international banks, won't tell Congress where the money is.
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, there's no transparency here in this process, and the whole thing is it's corrupted. I mean, right now there's a big debate over executive pay and bonuses, and, you know, can companies take government money and then pay big bonuses? And, you know, this is a debate that we shouldn't even have, because it shouldn't even be an issue, because none of these companies should have got any government money in the first place.
Peter,
they should have been allowed to go bankrupt. But now we bail them out, and now we have the governments getting involved in the decision-making. You know, first it's pay. Now they're telling some of these companies they have to cancel some of these sales conferences they had, you know, in Vegas or in Miami. I mean, but this is just the beginning. I mean, the government is going to get involved in every aspect of running these companies. It would have been better to let the companies go bankrupt and let these resources be reallocated in the private sector. Now we're entrenching them in the government sector where they're never going to be efficient.
Let's expand on that. Look what happened with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac with quasi government control, and they say that's one of the big sources of all of this. They're saying they're going to give bailouts to auto companies, but then control even who they can sell a car to. So we see the entire economy basically being taken over by government, and then through extension.
And the crazy thing about it is they're saying, look, we want to put strings on the money that we give to Ford and General Motors. We want to tell them how to make cars. We want them to make fuel-efficient cars or something like that. So somehow, Washington, D.C., these guys can't even, you know, make a profit running the post office. You know, that somehow we're going to put the people who are in charge of the post office in charge of the auto industry, and somehow they're going to do a better job than the people who have been running it in the past. I mean, come on, give me a break. The government doesn't have a clue what kind of cars people should make. They don't even know how to make a car to profit.
Peter,
these are decisions that need to be made in the free market by entrepreneurs that have a risk of losing money.
Yes. Peter, I want to go to calls here in the last 10 and 15 minutes with you, but before we do that briefly, they know things are imploding. They know they're collapsing, and then, as you said, they're going to be able to consolidate the power and actually use this crisis for themselves at the expense of our civilization. It appears the 20,000 troops that NORTHCOM says they want to use against the American people, the Army War College saying they're getting ready to engage the American people. These are amazing developments. Bills introduced to merge local police into FEMA centers and FEMA camps for mass relocation. I mean, this is the stuff of conspiracy theory, but it's now front page news. The Wall Street Journal came out last week and said the answer to the imploding economy is a new bubble into a North American Union and a Amero. So your take on that?
I mean, I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, who knows? I mean, I think there's a lot of rumors there and, you know, conspiracy theories, but I don't think the Canadians would be stupid enough to go for it. And I don't think the Canadian citizens would go for it. I mean, there's a lot of resentment of the U.S. So, number one, I don't think Canada's going to do it. So, you know, I don't know that we're going to have a union with Mexico. I mean, I just don't, you know, a union that the U.S. can, you know, coming together with Mexico, I don't know. It just doesn't. I don't seem to think that's in the cards.
Well, they're now proposing.
I think there's more. There's more of a chance of our union breaking up. I mean, I think over the next 5 to 10 years, you might see some states, Alaska, Texas, various states, trying to break away from the United States and leave. I think it's more likely that the union we have now gets smaller than that we include other countries.
Oh, absolutely. There's a lot of government reports saying that that the United States may break up into pieces. Of course, the globalists will love that. They'll just snap up the pieces that are left. Kerry in Georgia, you're on the air with Peter Schiff of Euro-Pacific Capital. Go ahead, Kerry, if you want to talk.
I've worked for PrisonPlanet.tv for 3 years, and I love your work. My question for Mr. Schiff, I've noticed that there's been a lot of foreclosed homes in my area, and that they're, you know, now selling for a third of half of the value. And I'm wondering what, you know, I've been making an extra 2.5 payments a year on my mortgage, and I've gotten a lot of equity built up, and I'm wondering what's happening to the equity that is built up in my home.
Well, I mean, whether the equity is there or not, I mean, just because you're paying down your mortgage doesn't necessarily mean you're building equity. I don't know what you paid for your house, and I don't know what you can sell it for. I mean, your house, you know, you could have negative equity in your home despite the fact that you've been making all these extra payments. It all depends on what you paid for your home and how much you bought for it. You might have overpaid for it. I don't know.
Yeah, let me give listeners a tip, and then Peter continue. People are going to the bank and making them renegotiate the value of the home, or they're threatening to walk away, and banks are buckling. Peter?
Yeah, look, you know, the borrower has all the cards, particularly the borrower with little or no equity in their homes. You know, you can simply go to your bank and say, look, if you want me to keep making the mortgage payment, you better renegotiate the mortgage. And the key is, in the past, you really couldn't do that, because if they renegotiated the mortgage, the difference between what you used to owe and what you owe now would have been taxable income, and you would have had a big tax bill. But the government put a stop to that for 5 years or so. So Americans have a window of opportunity where there's no downside to threatening your lender, because you can get a lower mortgage. Worst case scenario, you just walk away. You know, just give the house to the lender, which is what they don't want. But you can give them an asset that has negative value. And,
absolutely.
You know, there's plenty of houses on the market to rent. I mean, most people would be better off renting anyway. Chances are you can find a home that's as nice or nicer than the one you live in now, where the rent is lower than your mortgage.
All right, stay there, Peter. Final segment. We're called straight ahead. Up on screen at PrisonPlanet.tv, we have the new website, TheObamaDeception.net. TheObamaDeception.net. You can read about the film, watch the trailer in high quality, read articles on Obama, our proof, the straight scoop. Our guest is Peter Schiff. Before he leaves us in about 5 minutes, we'll put his website up on the screen for you, Europac.net. Peter, I want to take one or two final calls for you, but just very briefly. Good case scenario, how bad is it going to get? Worst case scenario, how bad will it get? Just summed up.
Well, worst case scenario is really bad. I mean, hyperinflation, our money being worthless, that's bad. I mean, look what happened in Germany, Weimar Republic Germany, when they had hyperinflation. They ended up with Adolf Hitler. You know, I mean, I don't think it's going to, I mean, I don't think it could be that bad, but it just shows you that, you know, bad things can happen when you get a country that's in that bad a shape. I mean, the environment, the economic environment that allowed someone like a Hitler to come to power, he never could have come to power if they didn't have that economic situation. There's a lot of danger to our liberties, to our way of life, based on how bad these things could get. Best case scenario would be the government comes to its senses at some point. They realize that the stimulus and bailouts are making the situation worse. We reverse course. We cut government spending. We increase interest rates, and we let the chips fall where they may. We suck it up, and we suffer a very severe economic downturn. We stop buying stuff, and we roll up our sleeves and go back to work and rebuild a viable economy, recapture our role in the world and make a country that our children can be proud of and be prosperous in. I mean, it's not a complete lost cause yet. I mean, we can still hope. But there's no way to get from where we are now to where we want to be without going through a lot of pain. We can go through more pain if we do it the government's way, or we can go through less pain if we do it the free market way.
And Obama says he's going the government way.
Oh, yeah, because that's the only way that they think Obama's out making speeches. He's saying that unless we act, it's going to get a lot worse. You know, it's going to get a lot worse whether we act or not. It's just that if we do act, it's going to get even worse than if we don't act.
Well, we saw that back in October. They passed the banker takeover, and look what happened. Let's talk to Michael and Mass. You're on the air with our guest. Go ahead.
Peter, Alex, how's it going today, guys?
Good. We got about a minute and a half.
All right. I want to say something real quick. In order for people to stop listening to the you know, the Davos folks, the Bilderberg Group folks, you know, the people who set us up to fail and then try to act like our saviors. It seems to me that in order for people to turn away from them, those people have to come under a certain degree of ridicule and need to be, you know, kind of dethroned in the eyes of the public. And
yeah.
I had an idea for Peter, and I know he's a big friend with Ron Paul. When Ron Paul's in front of the House Banking Committee with Bernanke, why doesn't he just say, "Hey, Ben, what are you guys doing at the Bilderberg Group?" before anything else, you know, happens and you give away any more money?
And I videotaped him. I videotaped him going in there setting policy last year. Yeah, yeah. What about calling for criminal charges for the rules that have been broken, the laws that have been broken, all the insider trading, all the corruption, Peter? I mean, we should be talking about these people being in trouble instead of them posing as the saviors. Peter?
Yeah, look, I mean, we need to confront the Fed about a lot of things that they've done wrong, but unfortunately they've been given even greater power, and now the Federal Reserve works in conjunction with the Treasury. So instead of having an independent central bank, the central bank is totally captured by the politicians. They work, you know, hand in hand with the Treasury Department. And, you know, the whole idea behind the Fed was that it was going to be independent to keep the politicians in check. And now they're able to run amok because the Federal Reserve is basically, you know, going along with the ride.
All right, Peter Schiff, we really appreciate you spending time with us. Take care.
Sure thing.
We'll be right back. Stay with us. We are now into the fourth and final hour, simulcasting at PrisonPlanet.tv. We have Peter J. Wallison, American Enterprise Institute, joining us to talk about his perspective on the banker takeover. Pardon me, my producer's telling me something. Come on in here and tell me. Yeah, he's coming up next segment. Great. Fantastic. But right now, for the next 4 minutes, let's go ahead and go to Ted Anderson with an update on what's happening in the gold and silver market, Midas Resources. Ted, 30 years in the gold and silver business. Again, he still has gold he bought back when gold was $830, $835, but it is almost all gone. Well up, right up there at $910 an ounce today. And, folks, don't wait till the economy implodes. Don't wait till everything completely falls apart and the paper money can't buy silver and gold. Move some of your assets today into gold and silver, and I can't find a better place or a better deal on physical holding of gold and silver. Ted, tell folks about today's offer.
Yeah, I sure will. Well, what we have going on right now is I do have, like you said, I have some of those francs and some of those sovereigns left at that 830 level. Interestingly enough, we did have a little dip down there below 900, and I was able to pick up some Maple Leafs and Eagles and that kind of thing. There's a new coin that's coming out of the U.S. Mint that's a replica of the $20 St. Gaudens. It's a high relief coin. Beautiful. I'm hoping to get a bunch of those. But right now, at this particular time, I mean, you just watch it. It dips back and, boom, it just forwards back up again. And the phones are ringing. People want the gold right now, and I would suggest that everybody get in on it. There just isn't enough good news out there in the economy that would force gold to drop, you know, significantly down anymore. Everything is up. And so, right now, if you want to get in on something that is underpriced and at a good value at this time, those francs, smaller gold pieces, they're a fifth of an ounce of gold. They're sitting at 217, and the British sovereign is at 265. Going into the marketplace now, that gold is at 910. The same coins, the franc right now would be at 228, British sovereigns would be at 279. Silver is just a fantastic buy at this time.
Ted, it is in the news that most places are sold out or they have anything, there's huge premiums. People are getting this under the regular price instead of just with a premium or no premium. You're doing this because you've got so many connections around the world that other people don't have. Folks, you're not going to find deals like this anywhere else. 800-686-2237, 800-686-2237.
Yeah, all I can say about it, Alex, right now is that there's times when I buy this stuff and the gold and silver bumps up. I mean, you can't even find this stuff at garage sale prices on eBay for what I'm selling it for. And the reason why that is because every time I see a dip, I'm a buyer. And I just trust in the fact that the United States government is going to screw things up even worse and push the prices even higher. I'm not afraid to take on inventory with that type of circumstance going on. I don't think the people that are listening to this show should be afraid of that either. Now is the time to be getting into gold and silver when the horns and the sirens and the, you know, the air raid sirens are going off. And everything is just pointing at the fact that the United States dollar is in trouble, that the United States economy is even in worse trouble, and the politicians think that spending money and building golf courses and marinas and God knows what else. I mean, look, I mean, let's just start paying for every woman that needs to have an or wants to have an abortion right now, I should say. You know, I mean, that's the kind of crap that they're trying to feed down our throat. They want to buy new cars for each senator, green cars. Oh, they're going to make the whole Capitol green now. Oh, my God. This is not going to solve our economic problems. You don't solve your economic problems by spending more money. That's not how you do it. You tighten your belt, and you do things where you're sacrificed, and you get through it. You know, this is crazy.
Absolutely. Let me fire out the number to folks out there. We were going to play your little gold song, Ted, but we ran out of time to do it for you. But 800-686-2237. 800-686-2237. The brokers are there. And again, you can hold those prices till midnight tonight, Ted?
Absolutely. They'll be here waiting for your call.
Don't count on the system, folks. Get out of the paper now. 800-686-2237. Thanks, Ted.
From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
He was White House counsel to Ronald Reagan. He's Peter J. Wallison, coordinator at the American Enterprise Institute's Program on Financial Markets Deregulation. Wallison studies banking, insurance, and the Wall Street Regulation as general counsel of the U.S. Treasury Department. He had a significant role in the development of the Reagan administration's proposals for the deregulation of the financial services industry. He was also general counsel of the Depository Insurance Deregulation Committee and later served, again, as White House counsel to President Ronald Reagan. His latest book is The Competitive Equality, a Better Way to Organize Mutual Funds, or Competitive Equity, excuse me. And so he joins us from the American Enterprise Institute for Public Policy Research. What in the world, from your perspective, is going on right now, and which direction, in your opinion, is Washington going, and is that in the right direction?
Well, it depends on the area we are talking about. I think the stimulus package looks like it is going in the right direction because the Republicans are finally beginning to influence things in the Senate. They obviously lost out completely in the House, but it was nice to see that all the Republicans stuck together and voted against what came out of the House, which was simply a pork barrel bill, the usual Democratic pork barrel. And I think the latest polls indicate the American people have recognized it as such. So things are looking a little bit better on the stimulus side. I'd say from Obama's point of view, things are really falling apart, because what happened to him shouldn't happen to a person who had any kind of sophistication in Washington. And I don't know where his advisors were on this, but he allowed the House of Representatives to shape his stimulus bill. And he then had to go out and tell the American people things that weren't true. This is not good for the way to start your administration. You shouldn't go out and lie to the American people about what your policies is going to do. They figure it out very quickly. So now the Senate has gotten hold of it. There is a lot of debate going on there. It looks like there will be some changes to make it much more tax friendly, more Republican taxes going into it, fewer pork barrel projects that came out of the House. Obama will take a big whipping on this one, and maybe he will have learned a lesson, but this is almost irretrievable. You know the old expression, and that is that you never have a second chance to make a first impression. And what the American people are seeing now in Obama is a completely different view than what they had seen during the campaign.
or you never get a fourth chance to make a third impression. I mean, I don't see this as his first big blowout. Almost all of his cabinet or sub-cabinet positions haven't paid their taxes entirely or partially and are having to resign in droves before they're ever even confirmed. I would call that the first big disaster. And then now people are finding out millions of dollars in Austin, Texas, where I live, for Frisbee golf, hundreds of millions for a river boardwalk, tens of millions for a golf course expansion, yacht clubs, Hollywood producer money. I mean, this is the worst pork barrel I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. And look, for me, for other Republicans, it is kind of humorous to see this happen. But on the other hand, I mean, we only have one president, and I do get a little bit worried that he is losing control of the situation. If we were not in such bad economic straits right now, if things were not really desperate in terms of the economy, then I wouldn't care one way or the other. But unfortunately, we have to have someone who speaks with one voice for the American government, and he's quickly losing his political capital to get the American people to believe him.
Well, he got where he is because he's a great actor and a great performer, and he did what he was told in the Senate. But now those instincts to say yes, yes, yes to everybody, those are the same instincts that made George Bush triple the size of government with the Democrats and destroyed his presidency. And it looks like Obama is looking to top that. Can you speak to that specifically and then give us your political take on most of the people he's trying to get in the cabinet having to step down?
Let me just talk about the spending. The spending is going to be terrible if Obama allows himself to be taken for a ride again by the Democrats in Congress. He's got to make a choice now. I mean, he has got to show the American people, who are quite concerned about spending, that he's got a handle on this thing and he's nobody's tool. What happened to him on the stimulus package is that Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats simply harnessed him to go out and tell the American people that what they had written up in this bill was a stimulus package, and that soon got old. I mean, people recognized that that was not true. So he's going to be in very, very bad shape. What, however, is happening elsewhere in his administration is also troubling to him, as you suggest. I mean, it isn't actually all his appointees or even a majority of appointees, but some very important ones didn't pay their taxes. Tim Geithner, who was the nominee for Secretary of the Treasury, got through despite the fact that he had quite clearly ignored his tax obligations. That is a remarkable thing that could happen, because when I was at the Treasury Department, if there was the slightest hint that a person had not met his tax obligations before he applied to have a job of any kind, I don't care whether you're talking about clipping hedges or you're talking about an assistant secretary's job, if you hadn't observed your tax obligations, you were out. You never even got for an interview. And here we have the Secretary of the Treasury who has set a very, very bad example. He's lost whatever moral authority he might have had.
Well, and going back, to be specific, it's quite a few of the cabinet and sub-cabinet people that haven't paid taxes. You're right, it's not all of them or the majority, but it's a large portion of prominent ones. I was kind of mixing in there other people having to step down, like New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson for, all these bizarre payments from lobbyists and then him giving them big. So, I mean, it's just, and then you got Blagojevich tied to him. You got Rahm Emanuel tied into all this. I mean, this looks like Chicago, big city machine on steroids now inhabiting D.C.
Yeah, no, it's not good. It's not good. He's got to get control of this thing and show the American people that he's actually trying to have an administration of the kind he talked about, and that he hasn't fooled them. This is what happened to Bill Clinton. You remember that Clinton became exceedingly popular unpopular right after he became president. And why was that? And that is because, although he campaigned as a moderate, he campaigned as a Democrat who was more conservative than most and a free trader and so forth. And the first thing he did when he came in was gaze in the military. And the American people turned to one another and they said, uh-oh, the Republicans were right. This guy's a liberal. And he no longer had any credibility with the American people. That's why so many of his other initiatives failed. And the real danger here for Obama is that he will be perceived the same way, in which case we will have 4 years of lack of leadership. And this is not a time when we should be having a lack of leadership.
All right, in the time we've got left with you, we're talking to the former White House counsel, chief counsel to President Reagan, also head counsel to the Treasury Department separately with the American Enterprise Institute, Peter J. Wallison. And he's written quite a few books. The latest one, Competitive Equity, A Better Way to Organize Mutual Funds, put out by AEI Press. Sir?
I also wrote a book about Reagan. It's on that list, but...
absolutely.
If your listeners are interested in that, they should be able to find that on Amazon.
Absolutely. Now, specifically with the bailout, you've been criticizing the way some of it's being carried out.
Yeah. Well, I am of the view that the only way we're going to be able to get the banks to start lending again is if the banks have more confidence in their own capital, in their own assets. And right now, they don't and they can't because their assets are largely mortgages, mortgage-backed securities that are bad quality, and whole mortgages of various kinds. Now, when that is true, and the housing market is continuing to fall, then these mortgages begin to default. And when they default, the banks have much less value there. As a result, they all are hoarding as much in the way of dollars as they can, so that if their depositors or their counterparties come in and ask for their money, the banks can pay them off. Otherwise, they're afraid they will be closed and default. So the only way, I think, to get the banks to start lending is to buy those bad assets off their balance sheets and hold them in a bad bank or hold them in some other kind of account, and substitute cash for those assets. In that case, the banks will be much healthier. Mm-hmm. They will look healthier to depositors and counterparties. They will feel comfortable beginning to lend money. But that's the solution to our problems on
the one
side.
Okay, well, we've got a break. We've got 5 more minutes with you after the break when we come back, and I want you to get into, on the other side, what's really happening instead of what you're saying should happen. And I want to ask you when we come back, what's going on here? They talk about trillions of dollars, not $850 billion, and the Federal Reserve gets up before Congress and says, we're not going to say where it is because the banks are being completely secretive because they're in such serious financial disarray. So we'll get your expert opinion, former chief counsel at the Treasury and to Ronald Reagan, when we come back on the other side. Stay with us.
Waging war on corruption. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Peter J. Wallison is our guest. We've got about 5 minutes left with him, and I'm going to get into a bunch of news, your phone calls, and a lot more in the last 30 minutes of the show today. Mr. Wallison, so you're saying buy the assets to get the banks going again. Instead, they just give them money, and then we're told no one can know where it's going or what they're doing with it. And then Obama makes a thing about executive compensation and criticizes the bailout as if he wasn't the guy that helped ram it through. So what's really happening right now?
Well, I think the Obama administration is following exactly the wrong policy in trying to limit compensation. I understand why they're doing it. Yes, people are angry because these people are paid so much. But if you want the banks to be able to function, you cannot punish the people who are now in charge of them. The people who are now in charge of them are not the people who caused them all this trouble. They're not the people who lost all this money. They're new people who have come along to try to help out. And if you're going to cut their salaries when they're working 20 hours a day and having to leave their families for long periods of time, it's not going to attract many good people to those institutions. And we need good people there now.
Well, sir, I'm not trying to be partisan because I'm not. I'm a libertarian Ron Paul guy. My issue here is that, and you can blame Bush a lot for this, it goes all the way back, but more than that, it really was the Clintons who changed a lot of these rules and who allowed a lot of this stuff to happen, and then they run around, then pointing their finger. But that's a side issue. While we have you here, you were White House counsel to Ronald Reagan, so I know you saw a lot of what went across his desk and what happened. And I have congressional testimony about Rex 84 and things like that. That's all been, mainly secret. Now they're openly announcing things like this with bills for FEMA camps to relocate Americans during collapse of society, continuity of government. It appears the federal government thinks we're going to go into a depression and is gearing up for collapse.
Well, I don't know anything about any of those things. Maybe they are happening, but I haven't seen anything like that. And it is actually, though, possible that we could have a depression. That's why the government is acting in such extraordinary ways. Why the Federal Reserve is doing so much? Why the Treasury Department is spending so much, trying to avoid the possibility of a recession? Because in the 30s, the diagnosis has been that the reason we had this depression in the 30s was that the Federal Reserve did not act. And the government did not act satisfactorily to keep the economy from declining and keeping deflation from occurring. So I think what they're doing is necessary. And I'm a conservative, but I don't understand why the Obama administration, when it has a chance to get things started again on a clean slate, would start now by punishing people on Wall Street who were not responsible for the losses.
Well, Mr. Wallison, in closing, you've certainly heard about how they're putting combat brigades inside the U.S. I mean, that's all over the news. You haven't heard about that?
No.
Have you heard about...
That doesn't mean it's not happening. It's just that I'm not reading it in the newspapers that I read, and I'm not reading about it in the newspapers, or I'm not hearing about it on the radio or seeing it on television.
But did you see Market Watch last week when they called for a North American union to get us out of this crisis?
No.
That Wall Street Journal online?
No, didn't see that.
Well, I mean, there's millions of things. I'm not saying, oh, how dare you not know about it. I mean, some of this stuff's obscure. You know, my whole point is that... the big government folks seem to like crises because then they get to play savior and expand their power. I mean, is there some of that going on with Obama?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is true that for people who are in the government, this is a great opportunity. You heard Rahm Emanuel say it'd be a terrible thing to waste a good crisis. And what they mean by that is they can, especially the Democrats, can take over a much broader part of the economy through regulation and otherwise when there's a crisis. I and many others in Washington are trying very hard to make sure that that doesn't happen. But it's going to be a very tough fight because there are people who for a long time have wanted to impose much more regulation and many more controls. And this crisis gives them an opportunity to do it because the American people sometimes believe that that's what has to be done in a case like this. But we will get out of this situation in a few years, but if we impose new regulation, that will be with us for 50 years, and that will slow down the growth of our economy and make us a much different society. So I'm quite worried about that.
All right, Peter Wallison, thank you so much for joining us. Folks can find out more about you at www.aei.org. Do you have a personal website, or can folks go check out your page?
That's it. I don't have a personal website.
All right. Thank you for the time. Appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. Another big wig on the show for you to try to pick their brain. There he tells you they're using the crises to bring in more government. All right. Jam-packed information straight ahead on the one, the only, GCN. All right, I'm going to take calls and cover news for the balance of the transmission. First, I want to thank our sponsors that make this radio show possible. One of them, Survival of Seeds, survivalofseeds.com. Knowing that something's coming is not the solution. Preparing for what's coming is the answer. Get 7 years of healthy food for pennies a pound. 100% heirloom seeds, non-GMO, non-hybrid. Grow your own food and eliminate your dependence on the establishment, on society. Get 15,000 heirloom vegetable seeds for a great price for a 7-year family supply. Get seeds 5 times cheaper than the GM trash sold at Walmart. Same day priority shipping, UPS available. Without a long-term food solution, you will starve if everything collapses or become a slave. I believe everybody should be independent, ladies and gentlemen. Give them a call. You need the insurance of having thousands of pounds of healthy food because the store shelves could end up being empty. And regardless, it's just fun to garden. So 620-637-2978, 620-637-2978. Survivalistseeds.com is the website. And along the same line being prepared, MySolarBackup.com. A lot of things can cut off your electrical power. Hurricanes, snow, ice, storms. Listeners should move towards getting off the grid. And here's a good way to do just that. A solar power generator is now available from a longtime sponsor, Solutions from Science. It's designed to provide 1,800 watts of power on demand in the event of any disaster or outage. Get an emergency power backup kit, which consists of a power 1800 converter, power plant, and high-efficiency solar panel designed to provide endless electricity. Remember, too, that gas generators need gas, but in a blackout, gas pumps can't pump gas because they run on electricity. The solar generator is like having a silent power plant hidden in your home. It's the perfect emergency backup for troubled times. The government doesn't own the sun yet, folks, so make your move today. Their website is mysolarbackup.com. That's mysolarbackup.com. Or you can always call them toll-free at 877-327-0365. That's 877-327-0365. mysolarbackup.com. All right, now, let's go ahead and rampage through your calls. Sean in Florida, you're on the air. Welcome.
How you doing, Alex?
Doing pretty good. What's on your mind?
I just had a couple unqualified, thought-provoking ideas. The first one is, we're talking about the worst-case scenario. Coins, by their very nature, have a fundamental metal value, although it's not, you know, the face value of the coin. But if we would ever,
it's because of scarcity. It can be above or below the face value of the coin, or depending on, you know, when you get into the market.
But as our currency devaluates, it might not be unwise to add more coinage into the currency, even though it is inconvenient and more cumbersome than paper. Because that metal will have an inherent value. If
no, that's the whole debate about what type of monetary system we should have. Sure.
But you know, another thing that I've thought recently is, as Ron Paul has always advocated, introducing a competing currency with the Federal Reserve note.
Yes.
You know, there's certainly some interesting court cases where, you know, the Supreme Court upheld the 16th Amendment, didn't create a new tax. And the Congress, you know, like Title 12, Chapter 3, Subchapter 12, Section 411, essentially says Federal Reserve notes can be redeemed in lawful money on demand at the Treasury Department.
But they don't do that.
Exactly. So, you know, a question I had is, you know, we said that the Federal Reserve is a private credit, and, you know, we have this whole system of taxation, everything based on the fact that we use this private credit currency voluntarily. So,
but it really isn't voluntarily, because they forced it to be not just the U.S. currency, but the world currency. And the establishment has been debasing the value of that as a form of theft. But back when it still had its value, they bought up real assets with it. And then we end up paying taxes to back up the value of that currency. So it really isn't a private voluntary currency. It's a private currency. The profit is private. The cost is put onto the public. I appreciate your call, Sean. Steve in Vegas, you're on the air. Steve in Las Vegas, Nevada, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, Alex.
Welcome, Steve.
I originally got on, I was hoping to speak to Peter. I worked for his dad for 5 years.
Yeah, his father is in prison, Peter Schiff, for educating people on how to expose the private IRS, or the collection agency for the private Federal Reserve. And but he's in prison for that, but then all these politicians, they don't have to pay taxes.
Right. He wrote a book. and I guess writing a book can be construed as illegal.
I remember that a few years ago.
Ask, you said something.
Yeah, well, just for those that don't know, let me just tell them and then you can talk.
Okay.
The
okay.
judge ruled that he's not allowed to sell that book. So, yeah, burning books, basically. Go ahead.
Right. He wrote the book, and now he's got to do jail time. You'd ask, you know, how come we aren't getting any prosecutions? I would submit to you that that's one of the reasons that federal employees, our public servants, are so busy prosecuting people for writing illegal books that they don't have time to prosecute any politicians or any Wall Street criminals or anybody like that.
Well, yeah, I mean, the government exists now as a rogue institution to protect the criminals that run the government.
The last guest that you had on, I hope maybe you can get the silver and gold guy to send him a copy of Jekyll Island, because I wondered when I heard him say that buy the bad loans. I wrote it down from the banks so that they'll be comfortable loaning. Well, they create money out of bookkeeping entries. I mean, why would they be loaning?
That last guy is pure establishment. We had him on to see if he'd, you know, slip up and say something.
We need him. We need him. He's got the ear of many people in Washington, D.C. If we could get him listening to InfoWars for a week, he'd be brought up to speed immediately.
That guy was the chief counsel to the president, believe me. That little comment about how he didn't know about Rex 84, give me a break. Give me a break.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, give me a break.
I didn't see that. I'd hope to. I've met Peter before, and I'd hope maybe I emailed Aaron. Maybe the next time you get him on, I'd like to. There's a lot of people that are wondering how Irwin's doing in incarceration,
you know,
and what we have to do to get him out of jail.
I hear you, and I appreciate his call. I've got to let you go sometime and go to others. I almost brought it up to him, but I got busy during the breaks taking care of stuff. I wanted to ask if it was all right with him, you know, to talk about his dad being in prison, because I never hear him talking about that. We interviewed Irwin Schiff here many times. He had a show on the Genesis Network 10 years ago for about a year and a half. I mean, Irwin had a nightly show here, Irwin Schiff. So they did send him to prison for writing a book. They said don't print any more of those books about the Federal Reserve being a scam. And that's, you heard his son. And next time he's on, I'll bring this up. But I don't want to, you know, run folks off, because I like Peter. And, you know, he's a golden boy of the mainstream media, so because of Ron Paul promoting him, so, you know, we'll have him on. That little comment at the end about, well, yeah, now the government's taking over the Federal Reserve, and that's the problem. It was supposed to be independent. It is the government. Private corporations act as governmental powers throughout history. You know, they're as big as governments. And it's controlling our government. Not the other way around. And now the government is just massing more powers and handing it over to the Federal Reserve through the banker bailout bill. But Irwin's son, Peter Schiff, was talking about, that's one thing I've heard him say I don't agree with, but it was at the end of the interview, so I couldn't, you know, follow it to its conclusion or flesh it out with him. Because, you know, the Federal Reserve is the source of all the problems. Peter's a smart guy, though. He knows all about this stuff. He knows that by not going into those areas, you know, he can still get on the media and talk about the basic facts against the bailout and the rest of it. So we appreciate him coming on. Let's go ahead and talk to Ryan in Illinois. Ryan, you're on the air.
Hi. I was just calling to talk about how everybody's trying to get the whole Obama situation all messed up. They think that, you know, he's the next, you know, pretty much, you know, I wouldn't like to say Jesus, but that's what a lot of people.
Oh no! There are a lot of churches saying he is the Messiah,
yeah,
President
of
the world, Savior of the world.
Yeah, but most of the culture that I'm in, I'm an artist myself. A lot of the culture have basically accepted him for, you know, whatever it seems, and nobody's really paying attention to any of the policies or anything that's going on. It's craziness because, you know, the first thing that he should have done when he came into office would have been, you know, go after the Federal Reserve, like you just said a minute ago. Not even. You know, that would have been key, because that obviously is, you know, everything that's debasing our currency right now. Why wouldn't you have the ability to just say, you know, he's trying to, like, play off things like how, I don't know if you read this, he was trying to take away all, like, the gifting to all, like, the politicians and the head people. It makes no sense. It's just a way to just send everybody in the opposite direction.
He'll do one thing and then do all this other window dressing. I'm closing Guantanamo, but he really isn't. He's just setting up more camps and continuing the secret arrest. Or I'm real mad about these banks getting all this compensation. But meanwhile, he's, you know, people running him are the architects of all this. This is by design. They did everything they could, all these administrations, to deindustrialize the country, to get us totally in debt, and then pull the rug out from under us. It's all staged. And the ruling elite need the media, the military, this whole system to make sure they're able to carry out this final phase of bondage, of enslavement of the population. So that's it, and that's that. But I appreciate your call. Good to hear from you. We're moving along here. Michael in Illinois, you're on the air.
Alex, I just wanted to comment on your last caller. I'm an economics writer myself. The problem he had with the buying the bad assets from the banks and the setting up the bad bank, and this is like the Republicans' new answer to everything Obama's doing. The problem with that is it leaves us in the same mess we're in now. It doesn't get us out of the mess. All it does is it creates the new bubble. We'll never get out of this mess.
There's more than one way to skin a cat. And all the things they're doing expand the power of the criminal bankers that engineered all of this.
Absolutely.
And they're greedy, control freak. Go ahead.
Well, until fractional reserve banking, which is nothing but theft, until fractional reserve banking is stopped, we're going to continue having these booms and busts. And until the Federal Reserve goes down, we will continue having the business cycle and having these problems, and it's never going to end.
I hear you, and I agree with you, and I appreciate your call. Maggie in Texas, you're on the air.
Yes, Alex. You've been talking about advertising propaganda, and I just wanted to call to your attention what I consider the most diabolically evil advertising campaign I've ever seen. And that is the recent vaccines are like hugs.
Gardasil. It's like a hug to take the experimental live cancer virus shot that on the insert they admit causes all sorts of autoimmune diseases and death in some cases, and which doesn't even protect you from genital warts. But, it's a huggy wug. Let's pull that up. Gardasil hug ad. Gardasil.
I'm not even talking. Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Well, I've seen another Gardasil where it's loving, and then she's hugging her daughter. You're saying there's one where they actually say it's like a hug?
No, yes, but this is a different one. This is a billboard. It shows an adorable baby, and it says vaccines are like hugs. You
I've
don't want to miss. You've seen it, okay? I've got a picture of it that I took with contrails in the background, and you used to have a place. For graphics like this, do you still? Because I'd like to send that if you could use it.
Do I still have? What are you
there
asking
used
for?
To be, but there used to be on before your InfoWars webpage changed a lot. There used to be a spot for people to contribute graphics. Mostly,
the best place for you is to go post that stuff in the PrisonPlanet.com forum, and then tens of thousands every day are in there and will look at it.
Do I have to be a member of that forum?
No,
I don't exactly know.
Nope, it's free.
How do you do it? Or could I contact Watson about it or just figure this out myself?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the billboard now that you talk about it. It shows a baby laying there and it says vaccines are like hugs. But, I mean, you say you know how to email something, so it's the same deal. You just go to Prison Planet Forum. What is it? ForumPrisonPlanet.com. And then you just create a username. It could be anything you want. It could be George Washington 97, and then
I did that a long time ago and never used it again, so I've forgotten it. Will that give me a problem?
No, you can just create whatever you want.
It
you
will
can put
not.
In fake email addresses, whatever you want to make things up.
I will try it. Okay, this has contrails and the chemtrails in the background.
Nutrition trails.
Yeah, that's it.
Nutrition trails in the background. And if you don't like the chemtrails, you're with Al-Qaeda. Thank you, Maggie. Scott in Arizona, you're on the air worldwide.
Nutrition trails, I like that. That's good. How you doing today?
Good, sir.
Good, good. Hey, I just want to pass along a possible word to you as a way to maybe kind of expand, network out what you're doing to get the word out. And God bless you for it. I've been aware of you for, I don't know, 10, 12 years now. And there's a gentleman who has these billboards he posts all the time. You may have heard of him, Bill Balsamico, Casa de Ice, although I don't think from the billboards that he puts up in front of his restaurant that he's quite as in-depth and understanding maybe as you and I might be as to what's going on in our country today. But he's very disenchanted with both sides of the political parties, and he's always posting stuff having to do with immigration, things that, you know, the antics that the president's pull. My guess is because these emails of these billboards hit so many people out there that maybe are not listening to InfoWars, but also are disenchanted with what's going on, that if you tried to get a hold, if you just look up CasaDeIce.com, that's Casa, the letter D, Ice.com.
Well, a lot of us don't know what you're talking about. What's going on? You're just talking about...
A gentleman just has a website. If you go to CasaDeIce.com, he has a restaurant. I don't remember what state he's in, but he posts political messages about how disgusted he is with what's going on in our government today. What I'm saying is, because he's already in that line of thinking of not being happy with what's going on, I think if somebody out of your office were to contact him, chit-chat a little bit, maybe even have him on, he would probably be more than willing to start posting possibly InfoWars.com billboard or otherwise to get
Sir. Look, I hear you, and I appreciate it. I'm just getting my new people in line. I'm just getting computers going and editing software and packages, and we're reaching millions every day, and it's all about you spreading the word about the show. If somebody wants to contact somebody who's putting billboards up and ask them to put up InfoWars.com or whatever, that's great. We don't have the money for that, and I'm not generally out there, you know. People tuning in here, you know, want to hear what I have to say, so I can tell people what I want to have to say, but I don't really cold call folks up. But that sounds like an interesting idea. And if people have the funds out there, don't wait for orders from headquarters. Go to the sound of the guns. You know, some catchy phrase like, don't be a sucker, InfoWars.com. Or walking billboards. Get our T-shirts at InfoWars.com and get them out. It's all about getting the word out. But, yes, that's a great idea. And so, folks, contact whoever this nice fella is and tell him to wake up to what's going on there. Yeah, I mean, on the immigration issue, the globalists are for it. I'm against it. Then you analyze why they're for it. Then you're even more against it. But it's real simple. Just whatever they're for, you're against. They want to overrun every nation with third world populations. I'm not against these poor third world populations. But we can't let it happen. The globalists wanted to drive down wages, bankrupt the states and their health care and welfare systems for total federalization and then internationalization. So, you know, I want to get Glenn Spencer back on. It's probably been a year since I've had Glenn Spencer, AmericanPatrol.com on. We're going to get Glenn Spencer on. We're going to come back, take more final calls in the final segment of this four-hour transmission, the fourth day of February, 2009. Don't forget, PrisonPlanet.tv.
Before you slip into unconsciousness, I'd like to have another kiss. Another flashing chance at bliss. Another kiss, another kiss. The days are bright and filled.
One more great little sponsor for the show today, and that's Ecola Blue, the best atmospheric water generator out there, bar none, and it is at an absolutely fabulous price. EcolaBlue.com is the website, and it just grabs water right out of the atmosphere. EcolaBlue.com, ECOLOBlue.com, or 800-691-6043, 800-691-6043. It's got seven filters it goes through, including reverse osmosis, silver impregnated carbon filter, on and on and on, UV, antibacterial, fungal light, and several other filters in there. Comes in a lot of different colors. Check them out online at ecoloblue.com, ecoloblue.com, or that number if you missed it. It's like a water cooler without the water bottle on the top. Just grabs it out of the air. 800-691-6043. All right. Let us now go ahead and go back to your calls. Who's up next here? Is it Paul or Dan or Betsy or Elliot? Paul in North Carolina. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hey, good afternoon, Alex. How are you doing today?
Pretty good, sir.
I just wanted to keep you informed about what's happening on the East Coast. Fort Bragg is they're increasing the amount of troops within the next year or two from 50,000 to 70,000.
No, they admit that's for the United States. Mm-hmm. That's public.
Yeah, and I was just wondering, you know, maybe you and your bunch of merry men could come out here and maybe talk with the soldiers and tell them sort of what's going on.
I would love to be able to. I would love to be able to do that, but I'm working 18 hours a day lately, I go home, see my family, come back at night, and I've gone to bases and off bases and talked to troops that are doing drills to take over the U.S. and people denied it, and now they admit they're doing it. So it's up to the American people to reach out to the troops.
Other than spreading the word, what could I possibly do? What types of CDs would you like me to pass out to some of the troops? Because I've gotten to know them within the last couple months.
Okay. What'll impress them is seeing a 10-year-old or 8-year-old film I made, like Police State 2000, Police State 2, The Takeover, Police State 3, Total Enslavement. And I show everything they're training to do, and I document how their plan's going to work. And here you are 10 years later, and it all happened, just like I said. Hey, you know, I've got a 3-CD combo pack. You can get them, make all the copies you want. I want you to get them out to people. I would give them Endgame. I would give them Terror Storm so they know the terror was staged. Things like that. And the troops aren't bad people. They're just brainwashed and ignorant, most of them. Or those that do know what's happening are freaked out. Well, I mean, you know, the majority of troops gave their money to Ron Paul in the campaign and supported him. So, you know, it shows they know what's going on. But the commanders are pure evil. You can forget trying to wake up the high-level commanders. They've been picked because they're globalists and hate this country. They're traitors.
The troops have just been conditioned, and we just have to unbrainwash them.
That's it. Appreciate the call. Jamming in one more. Dan in Texas. Sorry to Betsy and everybody. Oh, no, Betsy disagrees. I'm sorry. We're going to Betsy first. Betsy in Michigan. Go ahead.
Hey, it's actually Beastie, not Betsy.
Okay, well, your name's Betsy now for disagreeing. Okay, Beastie.
I have a simple disagreement, which is, you know, you actually said it earlier. I don't think we need to, you always say don't wait for orders from headquarters. I think it helps. I'll give you two examples. One was when Mark Dice did the Inform a Soldier campaign, where he came up with an idea and we spread it out there. Like, he gave orders from headquarters. You did the same thing when before 9/11 on your Access show.
No, I agree to a certain extent. I'm just saying, don't wait for me to tell you what to do to take action, okay? God bless you all, ladies and gentlemen. Retransmission starts now with all those big guests, Peter Schiff, you name it, at Infowars.com. Rebroadcast.